those of you who are listening right now, thank you. Congratulations. You might want to spread the word that you're with the cool kids who actually listen to the show live, because we have had some people who have emailed us and posted on our various social media sites and on our blog that they miss your scream.
Yes.
And they miss some of the music bumps
right
in the podcasts. And if you want to find out why that is, you can go to our blog, and our blog is at stephenjohnny.wordpress.com, and we explain what it is. The short story is, has to do with some of the platforms that do podcasts and music licensing and stuff like that.
Right.
So if you want to hear all the stuff, listen to us live.
Yes. How about that? Well, we're here for 5 hours tonight.
We are?
Yeah. Who's counting, right?
Okay. 5 hours?
Yes.
I didn't get that memo.
Oh, it's going to be lonely after midnight when he turns into a pumpkin.
And we should, we have a plethora of things planned for tonight.
And a lot of things, too.
That, too. So let me run down the
lineup. You just like using that word, don't you? Plethora.
Perhaps.
It's like pithy. It seems like it's coming out of your mouth wrong. Plethora. Seems wrong. Pithy.
And pleather, too, is a nice word.
Pleather.
Yes.
Pleather.
Yes.
I have some great pleather pants.
Do they still make pleather clothes?
Of course they do. They're vegan.
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to look cool, you wear pleather.
There's a plethora.
Okay.
There's a plethora.
Plethora. Oh. Yes, there is.
You're spraying germs about.
Coming up in a few minutes, a little after 9:30, we're going to talk with Mike Jensen, because this has been a night when, oh boy, do you need to pay attention to the skies, and that's how the weekend is going to play out. So Mike Jensen is going to join us, and we'll talk about that. After 10 o'clock, I've been so pleased. I was very pleasantly surprised at the number of people who posted and emailed after we did our weekly post of what's coming up on the show, people that are interested in learning about trusts and estate planning. And after 10 o'clock, we're going to talk with Julie Colozzi, who's a principal attorney and CEO of JPR Law. And that's what we're going to talk about. And there were a ton of people saying, oh boy, yeah, do I want to hear this?
I think they were in the same boat we were a couple years ago when we said, I'm Googling it, but I'm still not really understanding what I'm supposed to do. And that's where Julie came in.
Because every time you mention estate planning and trusts, it's like, whoosh, right over the top of my head.
Some people, they're good with that. I know.
Yeah.
You've seen my checkbook. No.
Yeah. That's why we have separate checkbooks. Then after 11 o'clock, we get to hang out with Max Armstrong. It's been too long since Max joined us, and he's got a very fun event coming up we're going to talk about. So that's after 11 o'clock. After midnight, Tom Appel will join us, and he, of course, is the publisher of Consumer Guide. And boy, are there a bunch of things to talk about with him tonight. Ford is saying they have their new Model T moment coming up. So we're going to find out about that. And there is a place that we've never visited, but we've seen pictures, and it's in Chicago. It's the Claremont Collections. It's a huge place. This guy was he loved old cars.
Is his name Claremont with a K?
Yeah. And sadly, he passed away, and there's going to be an auction of all the cars that he had.
You've not asked if there's a Studebaker, have you?
Yet.
No. Oh, no. No, no. No.
Well, that's one of the reasons we're going to talk about
it. No, no.
I need to know. because for years, no. Ron, I have said that there is either a Studebaker, a Gran Turismo Hawk, or a Studebaker Avante in my future.
Well, here you go.
Yeah. I'm good with the Avante. I think that's a very cool car.
With one of those great R1 supercharged engines?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. With that great engine.
You can get a great deal, it sounds like.
Hush.
Act now.
Stop it.
Well, I'm just saying.
Hey, I'm the one that I bring goodies into you in the newsroom. I've never seen him walk in there with anything for you.
But did you bring any goodies tonight?
No, I didn't.
Let that be a lesson.
Okay, point taken. We're going to take a break. Stay with us tonight, please. It's a rainy night, as I said when I posted pictures tonight. We went out in the storm, so you don't have to.
Yeah, great pictures. Go to our Facebook page.
I just put everything that I took. Because we took this crazy, circuitous route, and we went through my old neighborhood that I grew up in.
Clark Street.
Andersonville. And it was cool because we were driving about 3 miles an hour, so I could take pictures of the shops on the street.
By the way, if you are out tonight, A, turn on your damn lights.
Yes.
B, if you're riding your bicycle on a rainy night through traffic, don't be trying to sneak in between cars. And
on Clark Street, they have bike lanes, and the people were in traffic with cars. It was really scary. And it was a blinding rain. I don't know how they saw it.
And I get that they were trying to get out of the rain. I get that. But you want to be alive to get out of the rain.
Yes, right. And with those words to live by.
48 years ago, Elvis Presley passed away.
Yep.
And I remember that night so clearly. I was on the air at the Once Big 89,
mm-hmm.
and that afternoon got the news that Elvis had passed. And I was doing the 10 at night till 2 in the morning shift. And I wanted to do something, and I debated who would be a good person to talk to. And I decided on Pat Boone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can wonder why Pat Boone. Couple of reasons. A, he was a Southern kid, as Elvis is. B, during Elvis's early days in the 50s, it was Elvis and Pat Boone back and forth along with Fats Domino on the charts. And that was the deal. And Pat was a wonderful interview.
I was listening that night. That was, you did exactly the right thing because we were all stunned. In fact, my own personal story is kind of wacky. My mother had gone to the apartment upstairs where my aunt lived, and she picked up a pot of pinto beans, and she was bringing them down the stairs. And I'm on the back porch, and I yelled up to tell her that I just heard the news that Elvis had died. And she was so shocked, and this is going to sound so bizarre. She was so shocked, she kind of lost her step, and she slid, and the pot of beans went on her head. She's coming down the stairs, so we're laughing and crying. We just sat on the back porch, and we're laughing and crying. And then she's like, that was dinner. Oh, and Elvis is dead. What is happening in this world? And I still have that image in my head because it was like going in slow motion. Her house slippers slipped on the stairs, and boom, boom, and our arms went up and the beans went down, and she just kept saying, and Elvis is dead? You're not kidding? No.
There's a song in that, arms went up and the beans went down.
And Elvis was still dead when she stood up.
We shouldn't laugh, but we're laughing.
I know. That's what happened. We laughed, and then we literally sat on the back porch swing and wept.
Sure.
And, I mean, it was in her all over. And
anybody who was an Elvis fan knew in those last years that he was not in the best of shape. But this still came as a shock.
Yeah. Bob, what station were you working at? Bob, our engineer.
What year?
That would have been 1977.
77.
No, I was not. I didn't join the radio scene till 88.
Really?
Yeah.
Now that you look older.
Thanks. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Yeah. Oh, no. I should have been at some station. No.
Wait, I thought you knew Marconi. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah.
You know what?
Just a neighbor.
He's going to bring a pot of beans in for me
sometime.
Yeah. And then, of course, we've got Ron in the newsroom, a big Elvis fan.
Sure.
He's the only guy that we knew to give a bust of Elvis to.
Yeah.
And Julian wasn't around yet. Julian, your dad, a music lover, was he an Elvis fan?
Both my parents were music lovers, but my mother was the huge Elvis fan.
Really?
She had all of his movies, all of these big, the old VHS mm-hmm. tapes, every single one. So I grew up on Elvis.
Yeah.
I basically, like you guys, I grew up with Elvis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except he was dead when I saw him.
Yeah, right, when you came around.
My favorite early Elvis movies would have been Loving You and King Creole.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Jailhouse Rock, but Loving You, because Love Me Tender was, okay, here's this new kid, he's going to be on the screen, and he's got this part, and that's fine. But his first rock and roll movie was Loving You.
So we recorded G.I. Blues and Roustabout, and it was on... it wasn't on TCM.
No, it was on... not Access.
No. But what we thought was funny, because we just wanted to tune in and fast forward to some of the mm-hmm. songs, there was a disclaimer at the beginning of G.I. Blues.
Yeah. No, this wasn't G.I. Blues. This was...
we just watched it last night. Blue Hawaii.
Blue Hawaii.
I knew Blue was in the title, yes. And so there was the parental advisory.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? Maybe we need to stick with the movie to find out why they would have to have a parental advisory. Yeah. And the best I could figure is he was a little handsy with some of the young girls, but... Really?
Maybe.
That's what you need a parental advisory for?
And I've been reading a fascinating book that you were able to find one copy of.
Yes.
Hal Wallace, who was a legendary movie producer, he did an autobiography of years ago that is pretty much out of print. And as I'm going through this, he does a whole chapter on Elvis. And, I mean, he had worked with everybody from Gable to you name it.
Jerry Lewis.
Katharine Hepburn.
Mm-hmm.
And he ranks Elvis as one of the best, easiest, most professional people he ever worked with.
Yeah, yeah. He's brutally honest about some of the people he worked with that were not so nice. I mean, it's a really good book.
Yeah,
said it's the kind of book, too, you can just pick it up at any place and you go, oh, he's writing about Stanwyck.
A big fan of Jerry Lewis.
Yeah. I think he wrote about his work with Clark Gable. I mean, really, really big names.
If you can find a copy of it.
Well, I found a secondhand copy, so there might be other ones floating around. It was in decent shape, too.
It's a wonderful book. And really, particularly if you are a movie fan, because he goes from the 30s
mm-hmm.
through the 60s.
I think into the 70s. Yeah. He was still working, too. So it's Hal Wallace, W-A-L-L-I-S. And a lot of those Elvis movies, you see his name.
Yeah.
He was the guy behind them.
And Ron, where were you when Elvis died?
I was in Chicago. I was working at a factory at Bodine Electric across from WGN-TV, as a matter of fact. It was right across the parking lot from them. And, I heard about that. And for a moment, I thought I should get in my car and I should drive down to Memphis and be part of the morning. I mean, I was that big of a fan that I thought I could take some vacation time. I didn't do it, and I wish I had. But
you've been to Graceland, though, right?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Yeah. Elvis Week ends tonight, I guess, at midnight with a candlelight vigil. They had one last night.
Yeah. And there are literally thousands of people from all over the world that come down to Graceland. And I believe... one of the people who was on some panels was Linda Thompson, who was Elvis's girlfriend.
Wasn't she married to Bruce Jenner, that Linda Thompson?
I think so, yeah.
But she was with Elvis when he died. She was his girlfriend, wasn't she?
Ginger. His girlfriend was Ginger Alden.
Right.
Yeah, I talked with Ginger. And in fact, that was the only time I've ever set up any interview. Well, we don't like to do interviews where they become basically you're setting somebody up. I had to do it because, and now I can't think of his name, the awful author. He only writes about people after they've passed away.
Goldman was his
William
last name.
Goldman,
No, Albert Goldman.
Albert Goldman.
Yes.
And he did this book on Elvis, and I had him on for an hour, and I let him, during the first half hour, I just let him say whatever he wanted to say. In the second half hour out of the news, I said, well, you say that you, in the book, you talk about some of the people you interviewed. And I said, you say you interviewed Ginger Alden. And he said, that's right, I had extensive... And I said, well, that's interesting because I talked with Ginger last night and she says she never talked with you.
Mm. And she's on the line. Hello, Ginger.
No, she wasn't on the line. But then, I'll do two more very quickly. Then also, he said he talked with Elvis's Uncle Vester.
Mm-hmm.
I talked with Uncle Vester. No. Then he said he talked with Ed Parker, who was Elvis's karate instructor. And he said, yes, I talked with Ed. I said, well, Ed, what do you think? And I brought Ed Parker on the line. And Goldman got so ticked off, he hung up. We tried calling him back. He wouldn't come back on with us. but he was just a jerk.
So it was a fabrication. Yeah. So much of the book was. Yeah.
Also on this day, back in 2018, we lost Aretha Franklin.
Really?
Same day. Wow. I forgot that it was on the 16th of August.
7 years ago.
Yeah, she was 76, pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
One of the many extraordinary moments in Aretha Franklin's career. I don't know if you ever saw this, Julian. There was a... Was it a Grammy Award show or what was it? And there was going to be a classical presentation. And whoever the classical singer was got sick, something couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And spur of the moment, Aretha Franklin came out and did this incredible
Pavarotti.
It was. Pavarotti.
And she did this incredible operatic, mm-hmm. Aretha was all that.
Yeah. And a bag of chips.
Yeah. She was just...
One of our friends, Mark Matz, a member of the WGN family, mm-hmm. he sent this message. He said, I'm listening tonight. Talked with Max just yesterday. He's looking forward to our conversation with Max at 11 tonight. He said, my second day at WGN as radio logger...
With Wally Phillips.
...was the day that Elvis died.
Oh, boy.
Doesn't seem like 48 years ago. But anybody who was working in radio, like you were at the time, you remember how you're all going, how do you deal with this?
I still have, I don't know what condition it's in, I still have United Press International teletype from that day with the bulletins about Elvis having passed away.
Right. And that was a wonderful time when you knew you were in a newsroom because you heard the sound of the teletype machine just constantly
going. Well, you heard the but if there was a bulletin,
yes,
it was a ding, ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Yes. Because I remember the only teletype copy I've ever saved was the day that there was attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the air working two radio stations, an AM and an FM, mm-hmm. and we had the machines between them. I'm like, I don't know which way to go with this information. Do I go to the FM side? Do I go to the AM side? Yeah. And so I saved it. You know, and a lot of us used to save newspapers. I know you did.
Sure.
You don't really need to now because you can just tap on the internet.
But there's something about having the news. There are still some newspapers that we have saved.
Yeah, the smell. That's what it's about.
Yeah, my first job in radio, doing the overnight shift, I had to make sure that the teletype machines were freshly loaded with paper.
Paper, yes.
In addition to the shift I was doing. And at that point, I was doing the show and reading my own newscast, mm-hmm. but I had to have everything ready for the morning man when he came
right.
in.
So you had to have a big roll of paper there.
Yeah.
Julian, you're familiar with a teletype machine, right? Have you ever been in a newsroom?
That was an interesting blank look on your face, Julian.
Well, his eyes shot up to the ceiling. Like,
I got a Google machine here. Let's see.
It's the sound. I mean, if you've ever been in a newsroom, or I'm trying to think of television shows, network maybe, a movie where you heard that
Mary Tyler Moore.
That was the music that you heard, the sound of the teletype machine in the background,
and a bell when it was like an alert.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, whoa, there's something going on.
But when you first got into radio, Ron, were they still using teletype machines?
Oh, yeah. I had to clear the wires. You know, you had to
do that. Oh, yes, clear the wires. And you had pegs on the wall where you would put your local and your national and your sports and separate it like that.
That's where the phrase rip and read came from.
Oh, that's right.
Exactly.
If you weren't rewriting, you were just ripping it from the wire and reading it, which wasn't good, but sometimes you had to. There it is.
Yep.
That sounds a lot like a typewriter, but that's the way it was.
This just in.
Yeah, that's right.
And a lot of times different stations used to use that sound. In fact, some rock stations used to use it. When they would go from their regular rock program into their newscast, there would be like this this electronic thing, and then it would say W so-and-so and so news, and you would hear the teletype.
Well, didn't Larry Lujak use that for, like, animal stories, I think?
Uncle Larry might have used it for animal stories, little Ronnie.
Oh, I think so. I mean, that's kind of my memory of
it. Yes. Oh, boy. If you want to get to us tonight, again, we're getting text. Somebody texted us from a 608 area code and said, I literally drove through three severe thunderstorms today. Tell us where you are when you text us to tell us what the street looks like. Yeah. If you are without power, you need to tell us where you're texting us from.
Am I wrong, or is the worst thunderstorm we ever drove through, was that in Montgomery, Alabama?
Yes.
We were driving down to Panama City Beach. I believe your dad was with us.
Yeah.
And it was one of those absolutely blinding storms, but I didn't want to stop because I didn't want anybody to hit us.
And you're driving with your flashers on. And it was really quiet in our car because we were all silently praying. Huh. And I mean, we were praying big time.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, we were, as we were driving in, the jukebox in our brains was playing various rainy weather songs.
And as we said at the outset of the show, we went out in the storm tonight, so you don't have to. So you could stay close to home. And we just got a text from Terry, who was driving from the Rockford Belvedere area to Des Plaines. And Terry said that the storms were so bad out there, trees were ripped in half, trees and electric poles were down. By Belvedere High School, it looked like a dozen electric poles were down. It looked like a war zone. Mm. That is, yeah, that's interesting. That was some big, big storms. And Ram was talking about 50, 60-mile-an-hour winds out in the suburbs.
And we saw some people that had posted pictures from Schaumburg. And Tom Appel, we're going to be talking with Tom a little later tonight. He posted some pictures, and I'm trying to think of the suburb he was in. But it was nasty-looking skies.
And, oh, yeah. A lot of lightning, too, in the city. If you want to give us a weather report wherever you happen to be, you know, you can always get to us at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200.
And speaking of horrible weather, what was the story we were talking about earlier? It was from the Milwaukee area where people went to get their cars.
Oh, the casino. The casino, because when we were on there last Saturday night, that horrible historic rainfall up in the Milwaukee area occurred. And by the time we got home, we realized that Milwaukee was dealing with flooding, some serious flooding. And apparently the cars that were in the casino parking lot were left there until yesterday. And I saw a drone shot of those cars, and some of them are just covered with mud and silt and dirt, and you wonder how many of them actually were able to be driven out of that parking lot after being in water that deep.
Well, to answer every single question we've just asked, we now turn to Mike Jensen, who, thank you, Mike, because we were watching you on one of our monitors, and you literally just finished up your report on Channel 9, and you're nice enough to wander over to a different microphone and wade through the water with us. How you doing?
I always like joining you guys.
Thank you.
There was plenty of questions that were being asked of me as I was trying to get off the set and get back to you, because we have, you know, more thunderstorm potential tonight, and even though we're not looking for severe weather or anything like that, I mean, some folks that did get heavier rainfall, they're always like, well, okay, do I have to worry about, am my sump pump going to be working tonight? That kind of thing. Because that's been our case recently. We go from a couple of decent days to it's hot, very humid. Then the thunderstorms come, and those who do show up, they got some gusty winds. And, boy, the rain just comes down in buckets sometimes. And, you know, that's the pattern we've been in all summer long.
And we were noticing as we were driving in, and literally the thermometer on our car was going down.
Yeah.
I think it got down to about 73 during the storms.
Yeah, you went from 95 to 73, 74, and sat there. And that was at 5 o'clock when I was on. We had the severe weather ongoing. I was watching as we had about, I'd say, a good 25 or thereabouts degree spread between our coolest temperatures, where it was down into the lower 70s, where it had been storming, and then got down to, like, say, southern parts of LaSalle County, and it was, you know, 98 degrees. Mm. And so huge difference there, as you saw the rain cooled air. And now you walk outside, and while it's cooler, it's just that cling to you, yeah. muggy. Feels like we're down in New Orleans, but without the jazz and the gumbo.
Yeah. Air you can wear, as they say in the South.
Yeah,
right?
That's, I always like to say that air that you wear. I learned that from my first chief meteorologist. And we get those dew points that are above 70, and you just cannot escape it. And so, yeah, that's what we're in right now.
Well, winds were an issue this afternoon because we've had reports of 50, 60 mile an hour winds with another round of thunderstorms rolling through. Do you think winds will also be an issue?
I don't know that we're going to have huge winds here as we go through the rest of tonight. You have some gusts in there, but if you did, it's not going to be anything like we had earlier where we were snapping off tree branches and knocking over trees themselves, or even it looked like the an apartment building in Mount Prospect had its roof ripped off partially. Ooh. That we're not looking for here as we go through the rest of tonight. Tomorrow should be pretty quiet. Monday's back to being hot and humid with the showers and storms. Scattered about a little bit, but we're finally seeing where we finally get a break from the heat and humidity starting Wednesday through the rest of next week. So there's something to look forward to.
So if people are planning on the Air and Water Show tomorrow, you think it's a go that they'll be flying?
I think it's a go. I think we'll see temperatures along the lakefront in the upper 70s. It may still be humid, but much more comfortable. Yeah. For folks there, just a little bit cooler. And hey, even if it gets a little too hot for you, that's what the water's for, right?
Was there a hail actually reported this afternoon with that crazy temperature change?
Did have some hail that was up to an inch in diameter thereabouts. And a little bit of hail here and there. But the biggest thing was the winds and the heavy rain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you were still on television when I read the text from the listener who had just driven from Rockford Belvedere to Des Plaines and said, driving by Belvedere High School, it looked like a war zone with power lines down all around the school.
Yeah, that was a big problem. We had quite a few of those. And anybody is without power on a night like this, you're not very comfortable.
Yeah, yeah, really. Well, before we let you get back to business, I got to ask you a corn question. The Jensen Farm doing good with their corn this year?
They did. They had a great crop and just wrapped up last weekend. So now we look ahead to next spring.
Well, I saw on their Facebook page, the Jensen Facebook page, on Friday they were selling 100 pounds of pickles for $100. I'm like, be still my heart. If I had a place for 100 pounds of pickle, I'd be out there buying them.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's one of those tastes of summer, right? So, well, you guys have yourself a good night. I'm going to go jump back on TV.
All right. Okay. Appreciate it, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Bye now.
That's Mike Jensen from WGN-TV. And he just wrapped up what he was doing on TV. Ran over to another microphone, talks to us, and then he's going to be jumping back on Channel 9. So we can't thank him enough. But it's one of those nights when, whatever we're doing, if you're in the middle of something nasty that we should know about, you can text us, you can call us, whatever. The line to text or talk is 312-981-7200.
In fact, a listener texts us from an 847 area code, says, I'm in Palatine and have had power out for a couple of hours. I'm listening on my reliable transistor radio. Yay. I'm glad you've got a radio, and I'm glad it's a little bit cooler than it was earlier.
Speaking of power outage, I will.
Partly personal?
Partly personal. I hope we never, ever, 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 ever have to use it. But just this past week, we had a standby generator installed, and it took a couple days to get it all done.
It looks like a big storage chest on the patio. I said, I feel like it needs to be decorated. And they said, well, it's probably not a good idea. Just let it sit there.
Just let it be there and hope we never need it.
Exactly. Just be sure that green light is shining. And the interesting thing is we've lived almost 40 years in this apartment, and we can count maybe two, maybe three power outages.
The way we figured it, because we moved into the house that we now own in 1987, and we've had maybe three, maybe
until
four,
last month.
Until last month. We've had two power outages in the last month.
Yeah.
And that was enough to make us say, with climate change and everything else going on, something's happening. I would rather be prepared and never, ever, ever have to use it. But it's there.
It was not our house because the entire block went out. In fact, we were all talking about the fact we never have power outages. What's this all about? And it was just long enough. It wasn't for hours or days or anything like that, but it was long enough to shut down the TV and the computer and then all the clocks. And that reminds me of when the generator was being installed and the power has to be off. And we got very lucky because it was a decent day weather-wise. Yeah.
But it was a 9-to-5 installation.
Oh, yeah. Well, they got there at 8 and they left at 6:30. But I kept setting the clocks. So the power would come back on, and I'd run around the house, and I'd set all the clocks. And then 5 minutes later, I'd go, what? What? The power's off again. Foolishly, I'd go back and set the clocks. And I did that in the third time. I said, you know what? The heck with you guys. I'm wearing a watch. I don't need to set the clocks anymore. And then, of course, the installer said, I'm sorry, I should have notified you. I said, no, your job is much more important than that.
And they were so professional and so good.
John Carlson just texted. He's Sax with Brass. Sax with Brass from the past. He said, I was supposed to play with Brass from the Past, a great band you guys have to hear at the Niles Founders Day Fest at 6 o'clock tonight.
Oh, I bet they canceled that one.
We were there on standby at call time, waiting to set up when they had to evacuate. Storm pretty much destroyed the tents and the grounds. The stage and tent we were supposed to play in was blown down. Our sound tech crew gear was already set up, may have been damaged. Fortunately, the band had not set up yet with our instruments. We were all sheltered in our cars. Event was, of course, canceled. Still got paid. That was good. Had a nice dinner out with some of the members, but that's not how they planned the night to go. Reminded me of the night, the July night that we were up in Wheeling for Wheeling Fest. And we had enough time to introduce Roy Orbison. And
he did his set.
Yep. And then all of a sudden, some sirens were blaring, and people said, oh, we got to take cover. And as we were heading to the car, the big, ginormous tent just lifted up and came back down again. And that was, I think, that would have been in 1985, because that was the Saturday.
No, 86.
86, yes. Because we were starting our full-time gig that next Monday.
No, it would have been in 85. You're right. I was thinking of 86 when we moved from the Tribune Tower, from Bradley Place to the Tribune Tower.
Right, in 85 we were still sharing. We were the bastard children with the television folk over on Bradley Place.
Yeah, boy, was that true.
We'll take a break and come right back here. You want to get a hold of us? We're at 312-981-7200 on WGN.
Well, we got a lot coming up. For all the people that I was so really pleased, pleasantly surprised that we had so many people reacting to the promos that we put on social media where we say what we're going to be doing tonight. And so many people were excited that we were going to be talking about trusts, estate planning.
Right.
And I will introduce our guest for this portion of the show. This is Julie Colodzi, who is the principal attorney and CEO of JPR Law. And Julie, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. This is wonderful.
And full disclosure.
Yes.
Because there are people who say, conflict of interest, conflict of interest. Okay. Really, really, really full disclosure. Yes, we use Julie for our attorney setting up our trust. However, was there any financial break? No, because Julie didn't know we were going to ask her to be on the show. And we didn't know until after we'd done all this. And we were so impressed with what she did that we said, will you come on the show? And she said, sure.
Yeah. So, Julie, thank you for stopping by for answering our questions. It took us about a year and a half to get all of our questions answered, right?
It took a little while, but as much happens. Time as it takes is what's necessary. Yes. So.
And I remember when we first met you, we said, okay, be gentle, because we could Google all of this stuff, which many of these topics we did, but it was still very confusing for us. Because our main question was, how do you find out what you need? Because there are wills, and you always hear about that last will and testament, and then there are trusts. So should we start there?
Sure.
I mean, every attorney, and as an attorney, you do both, but does every attorney do both wills and trusts?
So in most cases, we're either doing a will or a will and a trust. So a trust kind of builds on the will.
Right.
So it kind of depends on the situation. So typically I'll meet with clients, kind of go through really the details of their lives, like who are the important people in their lives, who do they care about, What do they want for themselves? What do they want for their families when they're gone? We really focus on the family relationships, which in my practice I've found is extremely important to talk about. Like, what happens after I pass away with my family? Do they get along? Do they ever speak to each other again? You know, am I the glue? And so, you know, we're talking a lot about those topics. And then in the part of that conversation, we come up with what's important and what is my recommendation.
So you might have a client that doesn't even think about a trust, but after talking and interviewing them, you find out that, you know what, you need both.
Yes. A lot of times people come to me and say, well, I just want to know kind of how much it costs, because people are scared of what attorneys will charge them.
Right.
So, you know, they kind of come into it with like guarded about how much it'll cost, and they just want something simple and they want to keep it simple, which I get. Like, as an attorney, as a young attorney, I like to make everything super complicated. And then I got a little older and a little wiser, and you know, and so I only put in complication when there's a good reason for complication. Mm-hmm. So I find that, you know, I'll have a conversation, and then as part of that conversation, I think that might have happened with you guys as well, that, you know, we kind of went through things, and as I explained things, then it made sense to you, like, why you might want a trust in addition to just a will.
So. Right.
And let me cut to the chase a little bit. My pea-sized brain says one of the primary reasons for doing a trust is that you avoid probate. You keep the state, you keep the government. Nobody else gets your money and your stuff other than the people you want it to go to. Am I correct on that?
Definitely trusts have a huge privacy aspect. So, you know, in the default, if somebody dies without a will and they have assets in their individual name, then their family's going to have to go into the court and say to the judge, Your Honor, my mom, my dad, my grandma, my grandpa, whoever it is, has passed away. We need to appoint someone to wrap up the final affairs. And that's called a representative, an administrator, executor, you know, different. Those are all the same.
Are they interchangeable terms?
They're kind of like if you had a Venn diagram, like representative and then executor and administrator like within that. So,
what's a grantor?
A grantor or a settlor is a person who creates a trust.
Oh.
So it's the creator of the trust.
Okay.
So with probate, the idea is most people, and you can go read, you can Google it, you can chat GPT it, but, you know, the general wisdom out there is you want to avoid probate. So probate has expense that you don't need to have. The process is public. So, you know, we file a petition with the court, and all of your kids, their names, their addresses, their phone numbers are in the public record. Anybody can walk on into the courthouse and see that information. So, you know, there's a huge privacy aspect. So if we do a trust, so a trust is an entity separate and apart from the person who creates it.
And it shields you then?
It's a private situation. So we create it. It's kind of like a corporation. So once we create it, it exists, and it can own assets, or it could be the beneficiary on assets. And in that way, there are no, if we do all that, we create the trust, we do what we call fund the trust, which is changing beneficiaries, changing ownership on assets to name the trust.
And let me hold you on that, because we've had some people asking us about this, and they said, okay, does funding a trust mean I have to spend more money to... No, my understanding is you're basically saying Julie doesn't own this stuff. Julie's trust now owns this stuff.
So that's how you're funding it.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. And then when you pass away, if all of your stuff, whether it's physical things or bank accounts or stocks or bonds or your house, if that's owned by the trust or payable to the trust, then there is no probate. So we avoid the probate process through proper funding of your trust. So you create your trust. Some people don't fund their trusts. So that can be a problem.
Oh.
So
why would you go to the trouble and then not fund it? You just drop the ball and...
You know, it's in a, you know, it's complicated. I think people get confused.
I think you're right.
And also, we're not all born knowing this stuff. You do this for a living, and the average person thinks, okay, well, I've created a trust, end of story.
Yeah.
Now
I can die.
Correct. Correct. I don't know if you guys recall, but I gave you a document that I called your homework, which
was
stuff you had to do after the trust was funded. And normally, like, I'm following up with people like 6 months or a year later and kind of saying, hey, did you fund your trust? But I think a lot of, like, with attorneys, we find that most people don't want us to charge them to help them fund their trust. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, we give you directions on how to fund your trust, and then hopefully you do those things, you know, and if we give good instructions, you do. You can avoid probate.
the main thing that people come to you, well, I hear you saying one of the things is people are concerned about the cost to them to get this valuable advice and service.
Pardon me for interrupting, but is there a ballpark figure, not just for you, but just for any attorney, you could pay as little as 2 cents and as much as $5 billion? Does it depend on the person you're dealing with? And how do you research and make sure that you've got a right person?
And is it okay to ask the attorney going into it, what do you think this is going to run me?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my context, what I do is my initial consultation is always completely complimentary. I don't want people to be worried about fees and whatnot. And, you know, it's my job to explain things to my clients in a way that they understand what the options are. And then I give them options and I give them cost on that. So in my practice, most of my estate planning is flat fee. So I'm able to kind of judge by your situation how much time it's going to take me and whatnot. And then I'm able to give people I give them a quote, basically. Right. Some attorneys do things on an hourly rate, and it just kind of depends. As you get more and more wealth, then you need more and more complex things, and it costs more. But for most people, there's a kind of like a base level of documents that every single human being needs.
I got to just interject here, partly personal. One of the things we enjoyed about your way of doing business is, from day one, you said, you don't have to come to an office. We can do this over Zoom. And you could PowerPoint. You got pie charts and everything right there on our computer screen. We're sitting side by side. And I think that's important, too, because it takes away some of the fear of going into a, quote, law office, you know?
Yeah. So my practice is, I will do in-person meetings occasionally. But for the most part, everything's virtual. It's done via Zoom. I've had people do meetings from their bed, from their couch, from their kitchen table. And I think in your case, even sometimes you were in Chicago and sometimes you were in Florida when we were meeting. Mm-hmm. So it's very flexible. I actually had a client last week where they're on vacation up in Wisconsin and they're on a porch with a view of the lake, and they actually showed me the view of the lake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they got to do that on their vacation. It just took maybe like a half hour of their vacation. They were drinking coffee in the morning. And that was a great way to do it. It was very efficient.
And they were a lot less stressed, too.
Mm. And again, full disclosure, this is the first time we've met Julie in person.
That is true. We got our hug today, first hug.
After a couple of years. So we are talking about financial planning. We're talking about trusts and wills and all that stuff. And if you're just glazing over, been there, done that. And just when we think we know it, we said, you know what? We got to get her in here and have her share some of this knowledge.
By the way, I should give you the basics if you want to get to Julie. And Julie is the principal attorney and CEO of JPR Law LLC. And the website is jprlawgroup.com. That's jprlawgroup.com. And if you want to call, the number is 773-245-5262. 773-245-5262. And you can email julie@jprlawgroup.com. julie@jprlawgroup.com. And if you're glazing over at all that, this will all be in our podcast.
Right, right. So a listener texted, because people text us throughout the show at 312-981-7200, and said, okay, you got my attention. I own a house. I got a little money in the bank. And I've got two children. Do I have to have a financial planner? Am I in a position where I should be talking about not only a will, but maybe a trust as well? So how do you address that?
Sure. Well, so my initial questions would be very surrounding the family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how do your kids get along? You know, do they get along well? Maybe they don't get along so well. Mm-hmm. And I find that a lot of times when I'm asking these questions, the first go around is, oh, they get along great. And then in about 10 minutes later, you know, we're talking about, like, who do you pick to do these things?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I talk about, don't pick the procrastinator in your life. Don't pick the bossy one who's going to just, like, upset everyone, you know?
Good point.
And then when I go, you know, there's that person in the corner who's, like, kind of like, you know, this is stressful. You're in a hospital bed. Stuff's not going well, and it's very emotional. So there's some people who are, like, quiet in the corner, and then there's the other one that kind of
take
charge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe that person isn't the person you want. And maybe the person in the corner is really the right one. Mm-hmm. So as I paint these pictures of what's happening for my clients, and then you'll see them look at each other. And, or when I say the procrastinator thing, they're like,
They now, know one.
Susie's a procrastinator. Don't pick Susie, you know. So, you know, I like to talk about those sorts of issues because I find that that's important to people. Like, mm-hmm. what they're concerned with what happens with them. You know, if I'm in a hospital bed, I'm on a ventilator, I'm on this or that, they are concerned about that. Mm-hmm. And then they're concerned about the relationships of their family members during that time and then also after they pass. Like, what do these relationships look like? So then there's the financial aspect. So you mentioned a client that has like a house and maybe a bank account. So, you know, it really depends. I mean, as soon as a person turns 18, before you're 18, your parents are your guardians. You're presumed to be incompetent. When you turn 18, there's like a light switch flips, and now you're presumed to be competent. Your parents no longer can make decisions for you. So from that time, you know, we have powers of attorney. Powers of attorney, you know, look at people around you. Who do I want to make health decisions for me? Who do I want to make financial decisions for me if I become disabled? So even from age 18, that's kind of the first level. Mm-hmm. You know, so I have a lot of clients who have kids who go to college and whatnot, and we'll do what I call a power of attorney package. So we do like a medical authorization, healthcare power of attorney, because, you know, the kid's 1,600 miles away and they're sick, and the parents, you know, can't call mm-hmm. and get information about their child. So that's kind of like the entry level. So I have clients do that. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll have their kids do a power of attorney package. So that's kind of entry level. And then maybe you have a baby and now, you know, oh, what happened? If something happens to both of us, who takes care of my child?
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of like the next entry level. Mm-hmm. And then there's, now I'm starting to accumulate assets. I got a retirement plan. I got a house, this and that. So at that point, now we're looking at wills. Guardianship would be in a will. So we might be looking at wills. And then as soon as you own real estate, really, that's a good entry point to having a trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because the trust can own the real estate. And then if you ended up passing away or when you do, there would be no probate for that asset, which people find important, especially when they have children mm-hmm. who might be taken advantage of with their information out there. So
let me take you back to the medical aspect. So is that part of financial planning, talking about determining, you know, what you want to be done to you, mm-hmm. What are your wishes, and then that's documented, and then you give it to all of the important people so they know what your wishes are.
That's correct. So there's a thing called a healthcare power of attorney, and in that document, the principal, who's the person creating it, appoints an agent to act for them for health decisions. And that could be immediate, or it could be what we call springing, which is so long as you're fine, you're making all your own decisions. And it's only if you become disabled that your agent would begin to act. So in that document, the agent is tasked with what's called substituted judgment. So they're not supposed to do what they would do for themselves if they were in that physical health situation. They're tasked with doing what they think you would do. Mm-hmm. The principal would do. So the more they know about what you would want, you know, these aren't the funnest topics, of mm-mm. course, mm-hmm. you know. Like,
and some people are really funny about that because they're afraid it's almost putting a jinx. I'm speaking about my mom.
Well, I had a horrible time. From the time that that Johnny and I got married, I would talk to Johnny's mom and dad about putting together a will. Johnny's mom didn't want to hear it.
No. And she was a banker.
And I think that there is a mindset that says, if I do this, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
For some reason, there is that mindset.
And if you say it to them like that, they say, well, that's just ignorant. Okay, then why aren't we doing this?
I've always said, if you're in really, really, really good health, you're in a happy place, you got stuff, now's the time to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I find people's view of these situations kind of changes over time. Like when you're 25 or 30, like death and disability is so far away, it's not that hard of a topic. Mm-hmm. But as we get older, as it becomes more of like a real possibility, then people have a harder time talking.
It weighs
about
on
it.
You then. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, if you want to get to Julie, the website is jprlawgroup.com. You can call her at 773-245-5262. Or email at julie@jprlawgroup.com. One of the questions that that people have been texting in about, in fact, we have a couple texts about this. If you set up this this trust, whatever you're doing, can you make changes?
Right.
Yeah. So it depends on what kind of trust it is. I think you know, we have revocable trusts, irrevocable trusts, descendants trusts, supplemental needs trusts, all charitable trusts, all different sorts of trusts.
Alternate Tuesday during the vernal equinox trust.
Yes, exactly. So most trusts that people have are revocable trusts.
Revocable.
By their terms, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the person who creates it's called the grantor. They're also the trustee or manager of the trust, and they're also the beneficiary of the trust during their own lifetime, and they can change it at any time they want. So it's really just kind of from a tax perspective, a complete pass-through entity, and it's not like their kids can come and say, you can't get your nails done anymore. It's not like that. Mm. They're in complete control unless and until they become disabled. So before that, they're retaining the right to change it at any time. Once they become disabled, then, of course, they wouldn't have the capacity to change it.
Irrevocable means?
Irrevocable would mean that by the terms of the trust, it's not able to be changed by the grantor. So we do irrevocable trusts a lot of times in a tax context where we want to be able to make completed gifts, and we might be doing that with trusts, and we might have estate taxes, either Illinois or federal, and that's really when we're getting to irrevocable trusts. A lot of times it's in that context.
But the most common one is revocable.
Revocable trust, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So a listener at 517 area code said, I want to get a will prepared, but my wife is reluctant. Can I set up mine alone?
Yes, you do. Your spouse does not need to do an estate plan with you. I have had people come to me a couple years ago. I had the wife came to me and said, my husband won't do it, but I have my stuff and I want to make sure that I'm not leaving a mess for my kids.
Yeah.
And the interesting part was, like, we did disclose to him that we were doing this. And then about 2-3 weeks into the process, he called me and said, Wanna what? I want to do my estate plan. So, yeah. But I've also had situations where maybe the marriage isn't so good and maybe a spouse is kind of being secretive about that. Somebody could retain me. I don't have to tell their spouse what they're doing. So, you know, you don't have to do it with
but
your spouse.
Doesn't it get a little sticky, though, if they're both on the home that's going to end up being...
Potentially. A lot of times it has to do with inherited assets. Like, if husband and wife has inherited assets, she might want to
Not
go to her spouse.
I see. So I inherited dad's estate, and now I want to be sure that my kids, but we have a blended marriage, I want my kids to get what was their grandfather's, and so that's when you're spelling it out.
Correct.
Now, we both are on the house, and I want them to split it down the middle when we're gone.
Well, right. Speaking of that, let me throw... We have some friends. They live together. They love each other. They are not married for tax reasons. They each own half of the house. If one of them were to pass away...
She has no children, and he has 3 children.
Yeah.
So... People have come to her and said, have you talked about the fact that when he goes, the kids are not going to own half of your house?
Yes. Yeah. So that would really depend on how they were owning it jointly. There's a thing called joint tenancy, which is basically like both people own 100% of the property. And when one of them dies, it becomes the asset of the survivor entirely.
Oh, I see.
And then there's tenancy in common, which is more like if you took a rectangle and you divide it in two, one spouse owns the right half and one spouse owns the left half. So it would really depend on which one it is. Mm-hmm. So in the second, where it's 50-50, then the surviving spouse can end up owning half of the house with their spouse's children from a former marriage.
Yeah,
not a great situation.
No, mm-hmm. Especially if it's 3-1, and they're going, we want you to sell this because we want the money.
one of the things that I was pleasantly surprised to find out is how flexible trusts can be. Like at one point, you told us that if you're setting up your beneficiaries and one of them is a very young person, you can, in fact, set up that this beneficiary would not receive all of, if there's a dollar amount here, until they reached a certain age. So you really, trusts are very customizable, aren't they?
Yes, trusts are very flexible. And, you know, a lot of times we're putting in, you know, we might have a beneficiary who has problems, but maybe they're just young. So with young people, most people wouldn't want their 18-year-old getting $100,000 or $1 million. You know, they might turn around and do something that maybe that parent or grandparent wouldn't approve of. And they really want the money to last for them or be used for a good purpose, like mm-hmm. education. So we could say, oh, this money is for primarily for education. We might say, want to what? It can be for any like good purpose of support, but we just want it to be age controlled. So we might give them a certain amount at 18, a certain amount at 25, a certain amount at 30. You know, I've had a client it's 50, 55, and 65 with her children.
Really?
Right. Yeah, that might be. You know, we talk in the contact with my clients. I talk to them about not reaching out too far from the grave.
Yeah.
You know, so age-related controls make sense in most cases.
I'm curious about that particular case. Are they in their 20s and 30s now, and it's set up that it's going to kick in 50, 55, and 60?
No. In that case, it's a fairly high net worth situation, and
older.
I don't know if you know too many entrepreneurs, but a lot of times entrepreneurs have a lot of money, but they don't trust their kids very much.
Oh, okay.
So, and you know, sometimes it doesn't, you know, when you grow up with money, a lot of times, you know, and I have clients who are very concerned when they are high net worth that their children thrive and become productive citizens and all that. And so, you know, it is a very complex thing for parents of, you know, who have, you know, a high net worth.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, we didn't have to deal with that. So
no, we didn't. Now, you can also, as you're setting up a trust, you can also say, okay, I want this particular dollar amount to go to some charity or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yep. Yeah. So oftentimes we might do, you might want to give everything to your children, but you do have a little bit of a charitable intent. Maybe you give to charity. And so we could either carve off an exact dollar amount to give to a charity, or we could make a charity a remainder beneficiary, which means they would get a percent of what's left.
Hmm.
So you might give 1% to charity and 99% to your children, mm-hmm. something like that. And I had a client the other day who has a list of 100 charities.
Wow.
Yeah, that was actually, I thanked them. I said, we did some interesting things with that. And I said, thank you. You challenged my legal brain. I, you know, that was kind of fun.
I don't even think I know 100 charities.
Yeah, it was a lot of charities.
But they were important to this person.
Yeah, they were very, and they even have children, and they're just peeling off apart. They just have strong charitable intent, and they want to benefit these things.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so, you know, but a lot of times people are doing that as what I call a disaster clause beneficiary, meaning if they and their children died all at the same time and there were no descendants, then they go to charity or maybe some part charity versus like really extended family members.
Only just a few minutes left. We're talking about estate planning and setting up trusts. We're talking with Julie Colodzi, who is the principal attorney and CEO of JPR Law. You can get to Julie by checking out her website, jprlawgroup.com. And you can contact her by calling 773-245-5262, email julie@jprlawgroup.com.
And Janet in Pittsburgh checked in to say, I'm currently working on a will and I'm absolutely overwhelmed. She said, it's just, it makes my head spin. Thanks for touching on this subject because there's just so much to consider. So I'll just ask for her. She didn't ask if she's just sitting there trying to do this on her own. Maybe she's gone to ChatGPT or she's done a little Google search and found a kit. Could she call and ask you for some advice on what she should do?
You know, there's some do-it-yourselfers out there in every context, whether it's, you know, putting an addition on your house or fixing
changing your car. Oil in your car, yes.
You know, and there's those sorts of people in the world, and those people are going to want to go to like a legal Zoom or something like that. And I think the biggest problem I find with the legal Zoom or ChatGPT is that oftentimes the documents aren't executed appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's some aspect, you know, as lawyers, we're looking at all these different contingencies that may or may not happen. And we're using words that kind of account for those contingencies. And so, you know, I think a lot of times, like lay people don't like see all, they just look at the kind of the first like level of things and they're not kind of looking for, well, what if this happens and what if that happens?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for that reason, I would, and I've had people do legal Zoom wills and they didn't have two witnesses. And then what they wanted doesn't happen because it wasn't appropriately executed.
Okay.
They just don't understand how to execute it. So, So I know, but for some people it's fine, and I've seen people do a great job with that too. So, you know, whatever floats your boat. But I think the value that, you know, because I think in a lot of different professions, there's a question of, you know, AI and what this is going to do mm-hmm. to the profession and all that. And I think that what the value that attorneys bring to whatever situation it is that that personal explanation, the personal connection, and also, like, you know, we can, humans have, can make logical jumps that mm-hmm. computers can't. So I think that, I think that personal thing makes us have jobs in the future.
And from our experience, you can anticipate things that we go, yeah. oh, I never thought of that. Well, your computer's not going to do that for you.
And I feel that the AI is a starting point for information that you take and then verify with a reputable lawyer, individual, whatever.
Yes, and hopefully you're with a lawyer who is good at explaining things. You know, mm-hmm. probably not surprisingly, there are attorneys who are not very good at explaining things. They mm-hmm. use a lot of legalese and whatnot, and it confuses people. So I always like to use, like, hypotheticals. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in the hospital bed. Who's in the room? That sort of thing.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah.
Well, isn't that also important? You have to be comfortable with the person you're setting this up with. If you're not comfortable with them, they may be the most wonderful person in the world. If you don't get along with them, go to somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing with me and my practice is, like, if it's not a good match, I'm, like, complete, like, I'll meet with you, I give you my recommendations, you could decide whether you like me or not, mm-hmm. whether you like my mannerisms and how I explain things. And if you don't, that's okay. You know, there's mm-hmm. another attorney out there that's for you. So, you know, that's why all of my consultations are completely complimentary mm-hmm. for that reason. So, you know, if you don't, I met with you guys, you liked me, you retained me, but right. maybe you wouldn't like me, and that's okay. It's completely fine.
And I was, as was Johnny, impressed with your patience, because literally we talked with you for well over a year mm-hmm. before we finalized all this. And again, for anybody who's new to this conversation and thinking conflict of interest, no conflict of interest. We didn't get a break. Julie didn't know. We didn't know that we were going to ask her to be on the air until we finished the process and thought, you know, she kind of knows the drill. She might be a good guest, and said, would you come in the studio? And she said, yeah.
Well, before we run out of time, I want to sneak in this question. And this is from a listener who says, where does one go to do just a simple will? I'm a widow with only one child / heir. So this is a Lake County listener. So what would you recommend to that person?
So my recommendation to that person would be to find an attorney to consult with, hopefully on a complimentary basis. That attorney can explain what and kind of go through that client's, you know, concerns and whatnot and make some recommendations. I never try to force somebody, like a lot of attorneys, they just go, everybody needs a trust. And I don't do that. I give options. I say, here's a less expensive, you know, option, and here's a little bit more expensive option. Why might you want one over the other? Mm-hmm. And then my clients are free to choose. So, like, no pressure, you know, and but I would recommend having a good attorney, even in that context.
Right.
Even in that context. So
even with just the one heir.
Correct.
In fact, George texted and said, my 4 cents is call the good lawyer to have the will and trust done. The attorney brings value to it and can prevent problems in the future.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I agree with that.
Also, after you have set up this trust, not a bad idea to contact your home insurance, your car insurance companies to say, the home is now in the trust, the car is now in the trust, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so a lot of times we're adding the trust as an additional insured on the, like, homeowner's insurance policy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a good idea. But, I mean, mainly you're contacting your banks, you're contacting your IRA company, your 401k, maybe your employer has some benefits. So once the trust is created, then, like, I'm helping – you guys figure out what are those things we need to do.
And here's your homework.
Here's, I call it the homework.
That's right.
People relate to that a little better.
Well, we could go on. We've talked off the air about the fact that Julie is going to be nice enough to join us on a somewhat regular basis to answer your questions. And
because I can't believe the reaction we've
had. And you guys get to know her that way, and then you can be prepared with your questions in the future. Some people are like, oh, I didn't know you were going to do this, and I've got questions galore. So,
But also, before we let you get out of here, now I'm signaling for a turn.
Yes, you are.
There is this other thing that we wanted to talk to you about, because you live up north, and you and your husband are involved in kind of a cool thing.
So my husband and I are partners with another partner in a restaurant out on Lake Pistakey on the chain of lakes. The restaurant's been there for over 70 years.
Wow.
We have a customer who was sitting at the bar, and I talked to him. He's 86. And he claims that when he was 17, he got kicked out of there for underage drinking. So it's right now it's called the Backyard Bar and Marina. It's at 614 Bald Knob Road in Johnsburg, Illinois. And we do have live music every Saturday and Sunday from 3 to 6. It's a beautiful view.
And it's on the water.
It's on the water, yep. Yep, and if you have a boat, you can come on in on your boat. You can come on in on your golf cart if you're in the area, or by car, or motorcycle even.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so it's been around that long. How did you? Was it in your family? How did you get the restaurant?
No, my husband is really a what I would call a serial entrepreneur. So just like someone, would take a house and fix and flip it, which he does do. He also does that with businesses. So come in, like to maybe a business that is kind of at the tail end, and like bring it back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll sell it just like he'd sell a house that he fixed up.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to get up there sometime on a Sunday, since there's music on Sunday too, because I hate the fact that most places say Saturday nights when it all happens, when it happens here on Saturday night.
Mm.
Well, if you want to get a hold of Julie, you can do that. You can email her at julie@jpr. And I should say that's Julie Page. And your son is?
Richie.
Julie Page Richie. So it gives you the jprlawgroup.com. And you can go to jprlawgroup.com just to look at their website, too, to find out what's going on. And watch the space, because we'll get Julie back in here before the end of the year. And we told her when these crazy news stories break, we might be calling on you to get you to explain it to us, because it took us a year and a half, but we kind of sort of understand what we did. And that was... That was huge for us.
That's the goal. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes. Thank you for coming in tonight, and thanks for bringing your mom in, who's here from Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry that we're sending you back out in a storm, because they're also reporting, I see the lightning over the lake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you need, maybe you'll just drive out of it and just keep heading north.
Yes.
You're hoping.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Julie.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
You say... The word tractors and the word sexy. And who do you think of?
The one and only.
It's certainly not Max Armstrong.
Oh, no, it's Max Armstrong. Yes, this is the same Max Armstrong that you listened to for almost 50 years. So, in fact, we all grew up listening to Max Armstrong.
Wait just a minute there. Hey, young lady. If we were in the same studio, I'd be reaching over there just to smack you.
I know you would.
Remember those mornings I'd have a big old Mountain Dew and then come into the studio? I was a walking time bomb.
You were. And we would be doing the local item, and you would just barge in the door, and we would have that sweet little story from small town America.
Mm-hmm.
And then Max would walk in. Yeah.
Somehow it became tawdry.
Yes, it did. Frequently, that's true. But we always enjoyed the fact that farmers who get up before the sun comes up would write to us and say, we love that exchange between you guys, because you actually do get along. Little did they know.
We hit it well.
Yeah. You know, I used to hear from a lot of commodity traders, too, men and women who were en route down to the Board of Trade at that hour. And, of course, there's nothing but a museum down there now. There's no trading floor with the open pits. You know, when I got to Chicago to join Orion, I think there were 5,000 people in the trading community. And, of course, now it's a big data center sitting out in Aurora that handles all of the trades.
Yeah.
Wow. 5,000.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, when you had runners and you had clerks and local traders, commercial traders. It was an exciting place. And the markets were set, of course, for the entire world, right down there at LaSalle and Jackson. And they did just open a museum a few weeks ago there. You might want to take it in, look at it. I've heard some of the older traders say it's a little disappointing, but there's no way you could really capture everything that was there all of those years ago.
And over the years, we heard from so many traders who said they listened to Max and Orion Samuelson and Tom Skilling. And that this could all affect the market, right, Max?
Absolutely.
You know, there was a period of time they had a big monitor right there on the trading floor to watch Skilling's 12:45 update. That was with 30 minutes left in the trading session. And, you know, Orion and I would be on the radio saying, okay, we're about a minute away from Tom doing his television update, so watch to see what the price does. And it was pivotal, you know, pivotal to what was happening there.
Sure.
I have to ask you, you posted a video that just blew me away. It was a video of this very cool truck that you're driving.
And I turned to Steve, Max, I said, so when we are approaching our 50th wedding anniversary, you better have one of those trucks in my driveway, because I've always wanted a truck just like that.
I got to ask, what kind of truck is that?
It's a beautiful truck. Well, you know, I have International Harvester Tractors. International, of course, was headquartered in Chicago all of those years. It was at 180 North Michigan until 1965, and then it was right across the river at 401 North Michigan, right next to the Tribune Tower for about 20 years. They made trucks, and of course, International Trucks is still headquartered in Lisle, Illinois. But the International Harvester Trucks, this one was made in 1951, came out of the plant in Springfield, Ohio. I had the chance to buy it last summer, and I have just had a blast. It's a one-ton truck. It's three years older than I am. And come Tuesday morning, it'll be en route to Rantoul, Illinois, 120 miles south of Chicago, for our big Half Century of Progress Vintage Farm Equipment Show that starts on Thursday.
So you're going to drive it from the East Coast to Rantoul.
No. Let me set the record straight. There was a little misunderstanding. I think the way I may have phrased it, it is piggybacking. There's a gentleman who's hauling a tractor.
Good.
So we will not roll up any more of the miles on that odometer. I think it has about 73,000 miles on it in 74 years.
That's all?
It sat in a shed over near the Carolina coast.
Wow.
In my work on that truck over the past few months, I think I've cleared 40 mud dauber nests.
Wow.
For anybody who's ever seen, we call them dirt daubers in Tennessee. I mean, it's just a hideous clump of dirt, and these creatures are in there, and they mean business.
So, what was left of them anyway was in there. But I scraped about 40 of them out of the engine compartment and off the frame. But it's just been a joy working on that truck, and I've had quite a bit of help with it. Jerry Smoker, a farmer over in northern Indiana, Wanata, Indiana, said, "You need mud flaps, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah." He rolled up some IH mud flaps and sent them to me.
Oh.
And just a whole bunch of people helping me. It literally has taken a team to make this project come together. And it's going to be so much fun to have it and drive it down there. In fact, the fellow Old Chester who owned this truck, I think, is going to be at Rantoul. I told him if he's there, he can drive it down the 4,900-foot main runway there at the old air base.
But it looks like something that would be right off the showroom floor. I mean, you have done a magnificent job of restoring it, Max.
I didn't have to do a whole lot from an external standpoint, Steve. You know, Chester had it in great shape. I was told that it sat in a garage in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, for about 30 years. Mm. It just sat there. And then Chester, who was a mechanic by trade, I said, "What did you work on?" He said, "Well, boats and tractors." That's kind of an interesting combination. Mm-hmm. But he also, worked on this truck, and the tires were great. There were just some upgrades that needed to take place. I had to have the starter worked on and the generator worked on at a local shop here. Knock on wood, that puppy should start up real well at the show coming up in the week ahead.
Well, as you said, the show that's coming up, we got to talk about that because it's wildly popular. And am I right, Max? You were one of the reasons why the Farm Progress Show really got started.
Well, the half century of progress was an offshoot. Now, you see, the Farm Progress Show was started by, it was when Prairie Farmer was in the radio business, you know, right before, before Steve joined that bunch.
Yes.
And they started the Farm Progress Show in 1953 to celebrate the 50th anniversary of that show. In 2003, we started the half century of progress right across the road, and it was such a tremendous success that we decided to continue it. And the beauty of it is, you know, we only do it every other year, and I think that results, as you can imagine, in some pent-up demand. It becomes a bucket list event for people. So, you know, when that show starts on Thursday morning, there will have been 728 days since the last one, you know.
But we have to talk about what happens in, as I'm looking at my screen, in 4 days, 7 hours, 38 minutes, and 30 seconds. What would that be, Max?
Yeah, it's what we call the half century of progress, the biggest vintage farm equipment show in the United States. And guys and women will be hauling equipment from all over America. There's a guy hauling a tractor from the state of Maine. There's a guy hauling a tractor from Raleigh, North Carolina, and piggybacking an old international truck with it. That's 770 miles to Rantoul.
Wow.
One way. And so it's a special thing. People love to come out there, and we have crops standing in the field where they'll use the old corn pickers from 70 years ago. I will tell you, if you want to come, now it's 2 hours south of downtown Chicago, right down I-57 towards Champaign. Put on some very good walking shoes. It's an expansive facility. It's the old Chanute Air Base. And that's the thing people find, Steve and Johnny, that you do a lot of walking out there. We do rent golf carts, but those rentals were all tied up, I think, by the 1st of April.
All right. Listener wants to know, is this suitable to bring the kids?
It really is. Absolutely. Very young kids, I mean, babies, that might be a little bit problematic because it can be hot out there on the runways and taxiways. See, that's a municipal airport that is still in operation until our showtime. And then they close down the Rantoul Airport for 5 days while we have the setup and the operation of the show. Then they'll open it up again after the show next week. So it's a wonderful facility. It has served us well since our 2005 show. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of it is, you guys asked about Farm Progress Show earlier. The actual Farm Progress Show with the big new equipment is 1 hour away, and a day later, it will start on Tuesday, the 26th over at Decatur. So we set them up with 1 day in between, and people can come from other parts of the country and see the old stuff and go see the new stuff.
And this is vacation for a lot of farmers. This is something that they plan on doing every time. Well, if the farm allows them to get away for a while.
Johnny, to your point, and I think I posted this, it still maybe resides on my LinkedIn account. A man and a woman came up to me at this half-century show 2 years ago, and they said, we decided to come spend our vacation with you. And I said, well, that's great. Thank you. It's wonderful. She said, it's our first vacation. Now, this couple had to be, I'm guessing, 50 to 55 years old. They milked cows. They had not taken a vacation in their some 40 years of marriage.
Wow.
And they got a neighbor to milk for them so that they could come to the Rantoul show. That's the kind of special event it is. And you know, you'll hear from families who say, you know, Grandpa maybe not be with us too much longer. We want him to see the show. And so it's neat. Yeah, all ages. And yes, kids are welcome. Kids, I think, 12 and under are free, if I'm not mistaken. And the regular gate admission is $20. You can buy a pass for the entire show all 4 days for $40. Let me mention one more thing real fast here. As we open up our daily parade on Friday, we do a daily parade at 1 o'clock down that runway, that 4,800-foot runway 18. We'll be led off by the Chicago Police and Fire pipes and drums.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Again this year. Yeah, it's neat to have them there. I think we had 12 members all together there. Some had just gotten off shift when they headed to Rantoul for the show 2 years ago, and it's very special to have them there with us.
If you want to get a look at what we're talking about, the website is halfcenturyofprogress.com, and I love there is this montage of pictures, just some gorgeous shots, Max.
Yeah, our friend Chad Colby does some great drone shots during the show where you really get a feel for how expansive it is. And you look at some of the old equipment that's operating out there. We're very, very fortunate to have that old airbase, Steve, because it has so many hard surfaces. As you look at that, you can see the runways, but then it also has the fields where the guys can go out and use their old tractors.
You were talking about the truck that you got that was in, what, 1953 or something?
Made in 51, yeah.
What is the oldest piece of equipment that you have seen at the Half Century of Progress show?
Well, that's a real good question. I'm trying to think. We have Hart Parr Oliver 2. That's the first production tractor made. I think that goes back to around 1900, somewhere along in there.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, but generally speaking, the equipment that you'll see at this show was made in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And a lot of made in the decade of the 60s when we were really powering up tractors. John Deere, an International Harvester, Alice Chalmers, Oliver, J.I. Case, all of the big tractor companies. And every town had a whole bunch of dealerships back in the day. Now a farmer may have to drive 60 miles to get to a local dealer, 60 or more.
How old is your tractor that you're going to be bringing to Rantoul?
Well, the one that I'm keeping there is the 560, and that was made in 1961 over in Rock Island. I'm actually selling my Northern Illinois tractor that I've had for almost 30 years. It's an International Super M made in 1953. I still have a Super H here in North Carolina made in 1953, and then I have another International made in 1962. It came out of the Louisville plant, so. Yeah. It's been so much fun. And the people you get to meet, that's the neat thing about it. I have a very good friend who's going to be on the tractor ride with me. We kick off the show with a tractor ride on this Thursday morning. And he was there about 3 years ago. And he said, you know what? This has to be the happiest place on earth. He likened it to the Disney World of agriculture.
Yeah. Well, now, a listener wanted to know when you will actually be there. So you will be there Thursday for that very beginning start of the show.
Yeah, but we can leave for about 4 hours. We go on this tractor ride out through the countryside of Champaign and Vermilion counties. Then we come back in at about noon. Mm-hmm. I will be there all the rest of the day. I'll be there every minute of every day, actually, except for that tractor ride. So the show starts Thursday. Friday will be a big day. So will Saturday. I'll be doing a stage show there Saturday afternoon at 3:00. And then we also have, you know, the show still open on Sunday. That's a lighter attended day, as you might appreciate. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the best day to get good photos because you can get pictures of equipment without people in the shots.
I bet you get huge crowds for the tractor ride.
Yeah, you know, guys have been signing up, and I'm not sure what the list would be. We generally will have 100, 150, something like that. It's just a nice, comfortable number, and we get great cooperation from the Champaign County Sheriff's Department and other authorities. You really have to have that so that you have protected intersections because these tractors are only moving about 13, 15 miles per hour while the traffic is zooming around you at 80.
And you're sitting on that tractor for 4 hours?
Well, we'll have some breaks. That's a real good question. We'll stop along the way and have some soft drinks and cookies or donuts.
That's kind of butt-numbing if you think about 4 hours. Well,
that's the technical term.
Well, yes, and we have to have donuts to keep that cushion there.
That's right. Okay, we got a lot of ground to cover here, Max. We talked about Max's decades on this radio station, and I have always said that Max is a rock star to farmers. How many countries have you actually broadcast from over the years, Max?
Well, I think it's been about 30 different countries, but you know, it's a funny thing. Somebody asked me this question. I was visiting with a friend who's an agriculture banker just day before yesterday, and he said, you know, what's been the most enjoyable thing that really comes back to you from your career? And I said, it doesn't even require a second of study to answer that question. It's the visits with farmers on their farms. Mm-hmm. And in the past 10 years, I have been on more farms than probably in the previous 40. And that's neat. You get up in the cab with the farmer at harvest time, and they'll tell you stuff they probably shouldn't tell you. It's funny. Yeah. They'll talk about the in-laws and the wife. And, you know, I'm thinking, man, I shouldn't be hearing this. Of course, if you can't trust a farm broadcaster, who can you trust, right?
That's right. Especially the one and only farm broadcaster, Max Armstrong. Well, now, a couple of people mentioned that, in fact, you have a book, a wonderful book, Stories from the Heartland.
Two books.
You followed it with more Stories from the Heartland. Will your book be available at the Half Century of Progress show?
I think so. I think our good friend Corn Picker Bob is going to sell them in his booth. I'm going to try not to sign any, to be honest with you. It beat me up 2 years ago.
I bet.
And it was just, I don't mean that to sound wrong. It's just that it will probably be hot during this show. That's another thing that I should point out. We do have a cooling center. There is a building right at the edge of the base there, and you don't have to go far, but there are air-conditioned seats in there. You can go in and relax. We'll have a big cooling fan brought in by the fire departments, the Mabus division down there of the fire protection area. We'll have one of these big misting fans. Mm-hmm. And so that will help a little bit, but you know, when you're out there every minute of every day, it kind of wears you down a little bit. But yeah, we sure look forward to seeing folks and visiting with them. Many of them are active and involved farmers. And this is a, you know, as we were talking earlier, Johnny, it's a vacation. It's a breakaway for them during a challenging time of the farm economy. The economics are tough right now as expenses have stayed elevated and the prices for grains, especially, are down. That's not the case for beef. The cattle price just keeps on climbing. So does the beef price. And we're going to continue to see elevated beef prices for some time. The die is cast for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of some of the problems that farmers are having, and you talk about how you want to be in a cooling center, the weather has been kind of extreme in a lot of areas right now. Right now, we're seeing some lightning and nasty storms in the Chicago area. The weather has been really problematic for a lot of farmers in various parts of the country this year, hasn't it?
It has, and, you know, it is every year, I guess is the thing I would say, Steve. And when you get storms like that, that will result sometimes in crop damage, you also get beneficial rain. And rains that come along at this point of the season, when they come along in August, they add yield to the soybeans, generally speaking. The corn yield is pretty much set. They came out with a crop report the other day that I think many farmers were shaking their heads saying, no, it can't be this large. But it showed a corn crop 13% bigger than a year ago. Hmm. Soybean crop down only about 2%. That remains to be seen. I think many farmers are not believing the numbers these days, and they haven't for years. I think I've never seen, though, so much distrust of government crop estimates than we see right now among those in the farming community.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of farmers and tractors, I have to ask you about this tractor app. Tell us about that.
Well, I really don't have that anymore. I kind of pulled the plug on that a few years ago.
Really?
I had too much going on, actually, to be honest with you. I continue to post. I do Max's Tractor Shed every weekend on the television show This Week in Agribusiness that Orion and I started in 2005. Farm Progress now owns that show. And I still do Max's Tractor Shed there every week, featuring some old tractor and talking about some of the aspects of it. And it's the ownership of it, and I enjoy doing that. And those still get posted online. If you go to YouTube and put in Max's Tractor Shed, you'll see some of that stuff.
Well, good. I thought I was going crazy because I was trying to access the app, and I kept getting Max Television, HBO Max. And I was like, wait, that's not the right Max.
Oh, it's the wrong Max. Yeah, you don't know what you're getting there.
But, yeah, really. I didn't say Cinemax.
You're getting here either.
That's right. But you mentioned like drone pictures that are being taken. We were talking earlier about the fact that today is the 48th anniversary of Elvis's death, and Steve has the teletype, the actual bulletin that came across the wires. So we all remember when there were teletypes, and we all remember radio before cell phones. I know we changed our world doing talk shows because people weren't sitting at home on their bed. They were actually in their car or in their truck, in our case, all night. We had wonderful callers that were truckers coast to coast.
Yeah, and Orion and I were the first in the country to start taking calls from farmers in the field.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, when the first cell phone started popping up at around 1984, 83, somewhere along in there, when Motorola started coming out with those, mm-hmm. I knew farmers within about 60 miles of Chicago who had them already, and I said, hey, let's start taking calls. And we really enjoyed doing that, and so did the Chicago audience. Oh.
Did we tell you about the story of the first person we ever knew to have a cell phone, and you know who this person is? Bob Collins.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that big old bag phone.
Bob had this bag phone, and we were out. We'd gone to a movie with Bob and Christine. Then we were going to a restaurant. And walking through the restaurant, Bob just happens to pull out this big bag phone and starts talking as we're walking through
and
the restaurant.
And everybody in the restaurant for the lunch hour, they're looking like, that man is carrying a phone. It was hysterical. And that was about 1985. So, yeah.
Of course, it would have been Bob. Yes. Pardon me while I pull out my yes. bag phone.
Oh, my gosh. And recently, we were talking about the anniversary of that phone. And if we bought it today, it would be like a $4,000 phone.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, I remember. Orion and I both had them mounted in our cars.
Yes.
I
think
so did we.
Believe it or not, it was a part of our contract.
Us too. Because I was doing traffic from the road, so that's why I had it mounted in the car.
Remember the transceiver? I think it was like 18 inches by 18 inches. They mounted it in the trunk.
Yes.
Yep.
And then the handset itself was mounted on the hump, and then you had that curly Q antenna.
Yes.
It came out of the roof or the trunk lid, whatever.
Oh, my gosh. Talking about the way our world's changed with technology is just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And farmers embrace that technology. That's the fascinating thing.
Well, to your point, the companies keep coming forward with some tremendous technology. Last night, I recorded a whole bunch of the field demonstration announcements that will play at the Farm Progress Show coming up, next week, mm-hmm. week after next, mm-hmm. the 26th through the 28th. And so the equipment moves through the field. Farmers line up behind a rope, and they hear me talking about it. The technology is so incredible. You know, the farmer doesn't have to have hands on the wheel, doesn't have to have hands on the joystick. He or she can be paying attention to other things, watching the monitors in front of them to see how the equipment is operating. Sprayers put only the specific amount of spray that is needed to kill that weed. And in fact, there is technology that will spray per weed now.
No.
You're not just throwing herbicides all over the field. As you go across, the boom of that sprayer will sense the weed, will spray it, right that it catch that weed and nothing else. Hmm. And it's environmentally friendly, obviously, and it's cost effective because farmers can't afford a lot of crop inputs, that they don't need.
Sure. A listener wanted to know if at the Half Century of Progress show there will be any steam-powered equipment.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Great question. We have a family from down around Effingham, Illinois, and they bring big steam tractors. They'll have those working in the field. I mean, those... I laugh about this. I say, I'm surprised that Pfizer and Eli Lilly haven't come after us after all these years, because we put a dent every year in sales of Cialis and Viagra. I'm sure we do. I mean, it's incredible. These people line up. Oh, my gosh, Charlie, look at that thing. But, yes, we will have steam tractors, just as they have at the Sycamore Show or the Pontiac Show. But these are big ones. These are 110-horsepower steam tractors pulling big plows. There's a gentleman from over in Northwest Ohio will bring this massive tractor that he has. And it's called Earthquake. And that's kind of related to the theme of our show this year. Hmm. The theme is Come Feel the Earth Move. And, of course, Steve, you know what I was thinking about, Carol King, feel
of
the
course.
Earth move under your feet.
No, you scared me. I thought you were still back on something that was questionable.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Where are we going?
Yeah, we weren't sure which road you were going down, Max.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't either, but... I've had a role in coming up with many of these themes and the name of the show, actually. Mm-hmm. The name of the show came about because in the old farmhouse in southern Indiana, and you called her cellophane, Johnny.
Yes,
I know
you did.
All those years,
God bless
you were just so mean to my mom's cellophane. But anyway, she had a cane from the Chicago World's Fair in 1933. Beautiful cane with a metal tag on it. And it was the century of progress was the theme of that World's Fair in Chicago.
Right.
And so when we started this show, I said, all right, we're looking back 50 years. At that time, we were looking back 50 years to the start of the Farm Progress Show. I said, let's call it the half century of progress. And so that's how the name has come along and prevailed over all of these years.
Very cool.
Well, we were talking about the very first time that we talked with Max on our Saturday night show.
Right.
And this would have been back in 1985.
It was September of 1985. Now, we'd worked together for a couple of months. I had just started working on the Wally Phillips and Bob Collins show doing traffic, so I ran into Max frequently. But it was our Saturday night show that Max mentioned that he was going to be broadcasting. He was going to be at the very first Farm Aid. And that was September 22nd of 1985, Max. And that's when we had you on the radio, and you were in Champaign, right?
Yeah, it was at the University of Illinois. Right. There in the stadium was where the concert was held, which is kind of interesting because Champaign was not the epicenter of the farm crisis of the 1980s. I was talking with a friend about this the other day. You know, if you looked at where the farm economy was really bad in the 80s, from, say, 85 into maybe the early 90s, back it up about 5 years, around 1980 to 85, it was mostly in Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri. That's where you found more bank failures, rural banks going under. Heaven forbid, there was actually a rural banker shot and killed. Out in southwest Iowa, southeast Iowa during this period of time. But the eastern Corn Belt was a little more insulated. It was interesting because there were more off-farm job opportunities. You had, for example, the Delco plant at Anderson, Indiana. There were automobile plants and automobile-related parts plants in the eastern Corn Belt. So Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, and much of Illinois didn't suffer as much at that time. But what you have to remember is Willie Nelson was involved in this with Farm Aid, and he was a good friend of Big Jim Thompson, you may recall.
Yep.
Governor Jim. And I think that's how it wound up at the University of Illinois campus.
Interesting, because I remember that night so well. For some reason, I think it was rainy. You were standing out in the mud when you were talking to us. And I also remember many farm progresses when you guys were saying, it is mud around our ankles.
Yep.
And they finally put it at permanent sites, Johnny. Mm-hmm. So that show coming up at Decatur is a well-drained site. There are drainage pipes under that facility, and then the same thing happens when the Farm Progress Show is in Iowa. They used to move it, to your point. They used to move it from one real farm to another, but that could be a real mud bath.
Yeah, yeah. So you're going to see Max on Thursday, and that's going to be in Rantoul, and that's for the Half Century of Progress Show. But listeners want to know if, like last year, you're going to show up at the Sandwich Fair.
You know, I will be there on Friday. Generally, in the past, I've come in on the Wednesdays and Thursdays, and I just felt the Sandwich Fair needed somebody better on stage those 2 days. But I'm going to join the folks from the Nelson Multimedia Group out there, I've been with them many years, and they carried my programs on their stations way out through the countryside, and it'll be great to be there with them. So I'll be there on Friday of the Sandwich Fair only.
It's the Sandwich Fair. Come
Sandwich.
On. Yes.
Yeah. You know, Uncle Bobby put the place on the map, really.
That's true.
Course.
Yeah.
Yeah. He and Orion would talk about that fair every year and the great pork chop sandwich.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I can't wait to get out there to get me a pork chop sandwich.
We've had so many texts, people asking various questions. The interesting one. Somebody wants to know from a 847 area code, now that you're no longer doing radio and broadcasting full time, how are you enjoying most of your days? Is it on the farm? What are you doing?
Working on an old truck 3 years older than I am. I tell you, that has been all-consuming. You know, so many of the machines coming to Rantoul will have been restored at the last minute. I mean, there are guys working. I bet you right now there's somebody within the sounds of our voices working to get a tractor ready for Rantoul. I just painted my wheels this week. So if you see my truck, keep your friggin' fingers off my wheels. I mean, one morning I was out there in the shed at 4:30 and it was raining and the humidity was 100%. It was 90 degrees. That's not the best circumstances for painting wheels.
Well, on the subject of keep your fingers off my truck, Max said he sent me a video of the truck. And in the video, you see his wonderful wife, Linda, a saint, by the way. Mm-hmm. And she's taking her shoes off as she's getting in the truck.
She did.
Love that.
You have her well trained.
And
I did not ask her to do that. She did that on her own, leaving them right in the middle of the driveway.
And Max said that we could post that because the truck is absolutely gorgeous. Of course, the whole picture is so perfect because you got the white fence and you got the fields. And it's just a thrill to talk to you, Max, to catch up with you. It really is. There's so much to talk about, so many good memories. And it's just so nice that you're out there and you still sound the same.
When are you going to be back in Chicago?
I'm not real sure for an extended period of time. I pass through all the time, of course. You know, Midway Airport was my home away from home over the past few years,
you got a place to stay anytime you're heading this way.
I appreciate it so much.
Well, Max, thank you for doing what you're doing, and have fun. Have a safe trip to Rantoul with your cool truck and your tractor.
Well, thank you. And truly, folks from the Chicago area will feel warm and comfortable there. I mean, you know, welcoming. It's just that kind of a place. There's a surgeon, for example, who lives in Lake Point Tower, who comes down all the time. Mm. He'll come up to me and introduce himself. And it's just neat to have folks from the city come and enjoy what we enjoy there.
Well, Max, before we let you go, a lot of people want to know if they want to follow you, any particular website or social media place they should hang out.
That's a good question. I don't post as much as I used to, and I think, you know, it's I don't know what to say to that, actually. I still post some things on LinkedIn now and then, if it's of a professional nature. But if they go onto YouTube and put into Max Armstrong, they'll see some of the recent videos, I think, that I've done for This Week in Agribusiness, especially and from a tractor standpoint. My website for the book, MaxArmstrongBook.com, I think, is still live.
It is.
And there's an audio version of that book that we recorded as well. And every now and then you can find the original book out there someplace. You know, it's still circulating around, all beat up. Actually, a grain trader friend found one in the library in Riverside about 3 weeks ago. So they're still around there.
You'll find two in our bathroom.
Yes.
As I told Max the first time we talked about the book, I said, it's great bathroom reading, Max.
That's what I said. You know, you got a lot of pictures, you got short stories, and it fits right in the tank.
Thank you so much for joining us, Max. Stay healthy.
Thank you. Oh, what a privilege. I just enjoy visiting with you guys and remembering some wonderful times.
Well, call us anytime.
Back at you, Max.
Take care.
You take care. Bye-bye.
He is a one of a kind.
Yes, he is. We're lucky to know him and that he's still out there doing his thing.
We're going to talk cars with Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide.
So what are you road testing this week?
I have the 2025 Toyota Sequoia 1794 edition. This is Toyota's large crossover, really SUV. It's not a crossover. It's a three-row SUV. Like a Suburban, like an Expedition, a little bit tidier than that, but about that size. It's a big vehicle.
Why is 1794?
I'm so glad you asked because I forgot and I had to look it up again.
They haven't been around that long. It would have been a horse-drawn Toyota back then.
It's a strange name, and it's a little bit of a stretch as an automotive model name, but the 1794 is a tribute to the ranch that had once occupied the space that Toyota's relatively new San Antonio factory sits on. So that ranch was established in 1794. It's long gone because it's a Toyota factory now.
I'm sorry, that's too many hoops to jump through to get to that.
Really?
What the? It is. It is. The good news is it does have a ranchy feel. It's a nice wooden leather inside.
So you like the vehicle.
I do.
What are you talking about price-wise?
This one gets close to 990 with stuff.
Ooh.
And yeah, it's a lot of money, but that's where vehicles in this class play. Now, unfortunately, a loaded Suburban will go for that. And this is less than an Escalade, less than a Ford, Lincoln Navigator.
Yeah.
It's a nice vehicle. And Toyotas do a really great job of holding on to their resale value. Mm-hmm. Though you're out a lot of cash up front, you will get it back when you sell the vehicle.
Hmm.
Well, if I was pausing because we're seeing lots of lightning down here.
We're in a glass loop. A glass box with lightning all around us. So.
And if your radio speaker is going...
Oh, a listener just checked in and said in Palatine, we still have no power. So, Tom, you're lucky you got power in the Northwest Burbs.
I have power sort of in the middle of Palatine. My mom's on the south side. She does not have power.
Ooh. Oh, dear.
So it's out sort of sporadically around here.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, what is that Ford, and did they still make it, the one that they had been advertising? If your power goes out, the truck will power your house?
The Ford F-150 Lightning.
I'm sorry.
And there's probably people taking advantage of that now, but the F-150 Lightning has an enormous battery, up to 130 kilowatt hours, and that will power your house for a number of days if you're not using a lot of stuff in your house.
So as much as I want a truck, I said to Steve, why are we getting a standby generator when we can just get one of those? And we just park it on the patio, and I'll have a truck to go to the garden center, and then we can power the house.
But speaking of Ford, let me segue to Ford is saying that we're about to experience another Model T moment. What's that all about?
Yeah, so Ford started not advertising, but teasing this event that took place on Monday. They called it their Model T moment, and it's a big deal because it represents a lot of different changes and hopefully a lot of change for the good. But Jim Farley, Ford's CEO, showed up in Kansas, in Louisville, to talk about plans they have for a very affordably built electric vehicle. So instead of backing away from electric vehicles, Ford is going all in, and they're calling it their Model T moment because it's going to represent a very big change in manufacturing. And very much like the Model T, they're trying to get the price of the vehicle down. So I think we'll talk about the product first. It's a compact pickup truck. It's going to be electric, and they're shooting for a price of $30,000. That's great news.
That is.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the Louisville assembly plant, they're talking about a new type of assembly line that brings three lines into one, but it's going to wildly simplify manufacturing. So they're talking about 20 to 30% fewer parts, a lot less wires in the wiring harness, which can be very heavy and expensive, using a much smaller battery more efficiently and effectively. I guess this vehicle is going to be lighter. And then bringing back some workers there. Now, there's kind of a dark undertone to this. They're going to need fewer workers than they did in the past because of the efficiency of this assembly line.
Wow. And this is like a $5 billion investment for Ford?
$5 billion, yeah. $2 billion down there in Kansas City and another three at Blue Oval Assembly, where they're doing a lot of EV stuff. Mm-hmm. So a lot of money. And this can all pay off. One of the things they're talking about that's very, very expensive is something that Tesla does now. It's called gigacasting. They're calling it mega casting, but it's when you take a bunch of parts, usually a chassis part or a rear suspension or something like that, and cast them as a single piece. And to do this, you have to spend a lot of money up front on the casting machine that does this. The press that does this, but what you end up with is a very sturdy, strong piece that should be very reliable, last longer, and be much cheaper to assemble on a piece-by-piece basis. So big commitment. Tesla's been doing this for years with good results. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see a mainstream maker work with this.
Now, if they're talking about eliminating a lot of wiring, is that in part because of the increase in computer technology that is becoming a part of automobiles?
It is, Steve, yes. This is something they call zonal architecture. And the idea is that each subsystem is self-contained but fully communicative with the other subsystems of the car. So instead of having a lot of wires running willy-nilly through a bunch of different routers, everything would be independent but very very able to communicate with the other parts of the car. The Cybertruck is supposed to employ this. That we haven't seen the results of that in any way as positive, but moving forward, it makes sense. And ultimately, it should save weight and reduce complexity.
Now, if Ford is talking about it being a Model T moment, but isn't this becoming kind of the price of admission in electric vehicles, making electric vehicles more affordable? Wasn't it just this week that Tesla came out with an announcement about a new vehicle they're going to be doing, and their price point is supposedly around $20,000?
Tesla keeps going back and forth on whether they want to build a car that inexpensive. And part of the problem is there's no money in making it. it's tough to do. And Tesla was going to do, a $25,000 car. Mm-hmm. And that was based on the fact that they were going to build a factory in Mexico. Mm-hmm. Well, none of that works anymore. It doesn't work because they haven't invested in Mexico. And it doesn't work because the tariffs would kill that program. So interesting to see what Tesla is going to do next. But I don't think they want to do a completely new model that would be that inexpensive. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're talking about a very cheap version of the Model Y, which is super popular.
But isn't mainstream pricing the key to getting more electric vehicles into the marketplace?
It is. And we've seen that Chevrolet this year, its EV sales are up 100%. And that's due largely to the Equinox EV, which has a base price of $35,000, well-equipped and with 300 miles of range. And it's a smash hit with consumers. So clearly, nearly 300 miles of range and 35 grand or less is a sweet spot for consumers because consumers are snapping these up.
We did want to talk about, before we get, because we haven't mentioned this, on our Facebook page, and Tom, you might want to take a look at this too, Johnny posted a terrific video that Max Armstrong sent us. It's of Max Armstrong's gorgeous 1951 truck that he's pulling out in his on his farm. And it is so cool.
His International Harvester truck that he worked pretty tirelessly to redo. And the woman that you see in that video, that's his wife, Linda, taking her shoes off to get in the truck, which is the way it should be. Before we take a break for news, Tom, what else have you been road testing?
I just finished my review, and it's posted now, of the 2025 Lincoln Navigator Reserve. Mm. About the size of the vehicle we just discussed, and it's very much like the Ford Expedition, I'm sorry, but it is the luxury version, the Lincoln version of the Expedition, and it is convincingly luxurious. It's a really good execution. It is big, it is sumptuous, it is fast, it is quiet, it rides and handles very well. It handles way better than a car this size should, but most importantly, it just feels smooth and refined and quiet, and it does what people need. And I would not recommend this vehicle to anyone who does not need this much mass, unless you're towing, you know, horses, something like that, because you can do a nice crossover, I think, more easily than this. But and these are profoundly expensive. The one I drove was well over 100 grand, but it does the job it's supposed to do. And here's a little piece of good news. Despite its hugeness and price, I got like 18 and a half miles per gallon, and it runs on regular gas.
Wow.
For a car for a vehicle that big, that's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you said it was convincingly luxurious. Did you go into it with kind of a preconceived notion that it wasn't going to be maybe $100,000 worth?
No, because I've driven Navigators in previous generations before, and they've all been very good, but it is based on the Ford Expedition, and the Ford Expedition can be optioned up pretty darn nicely. Mm-hmm. But this does make a meaningful leap, and it does help justify the money. It's a lot of money. but the prestige and the status are there, and the content and refinement do help justify all that money.
And Lincoln has done a very good job over, would you say, the past decade of actually becoming more of a luxury automaker. And I know you can say, well, haven't they always been? Well, not so much.
No, you're right. For a lot of times, Lincolns were just gussied up Fords, and it was kind of transparent. And then Ford killed Mercury. And when they left that space between Ford and Lincoln, Lincoln went a little upmarket. Ford stayed where it was. And I think this helped Lincoln establish what it was. Instead of there being this step in the middle, Lincoln is now a very meaningful leap up from Ford.
Well, we're going to take a break for news, but on the subject of Lincoln, and we will get to some more recalls in the next half hour, the Lincoln Aviator vehicles were recalled this past week for potential issues with the rear windows reversing improperly while you're closing them. Huh? Like, really? How do they reverse while you're trying to close them? They go down instead of going up?
Is that a computer problem?
there is a trigger in there, like that the window is supposed to detect any sort of resistance. So,
it got like a finger. It got too sophisticated, is what happened.
Yeah, a finger, a kid's head. You know, something like that.
Yes, yes.
There is a place that we have never been to, and I've wanted to go there, and sadly, it looks like it's not going to be there much longer. The Claremont Collections in Chicago, which we talked about this, I want to say about a year or so ago, and it was a collection owned by one man, and it was a building that had all these wonderful collectible cars, and now... he has passed away, and there's an auction. What do you know about that, Tom?
Yeah, the Claremont Collection is well known to a lot of my local media colleagues simply because the owner, Larry Claremont, had opened it up to the media a number of times for free viewing. But it's right in the middle of the city. It's 100,000 square feet.
That's amazing.
And the collection is interesting because there's no rhyme or reason to it. And there's a lot of junk and a lot of gold in there. And he just collected what he liked and what he wanted. And that makes it kind of special. So there's truly classic stuff. There's Duesenbergs, things like that, a Pierce Arrow. And one of my favorite cars on the whole planet, a 47 Tatra T87. And people unfamiliar with Tatra might want to look that car up, but it was part of something they call the Streamline cars. There were three of them, and they were aerodynamic way before aerodynamics were cool. But yeah, Larry died a couple of years ago, and they're auctioning off the collection, and you're running out of time to see this. It closes next month, and I think it's open every day, and it's not expensive to see. So if you want to get down there, you have to do it soon.
275 vehicles. And this all ends on September 19th, because that's when the auction will take place. But I'm looking at Larry's Legacy, and you can go to the Mecum Auctions, Larry's Legacy, or you can just do a search for Claremont Collection, Claremont with a K. The place where he had his stuff stored is awesome, because he's got so much neon with the Rolls-Royce sign, the Pontiac sign, the... I mean, it's just beautiful. And it's, as you said, right in the center of the city.
And we were just talking about Lincoln. And one of the many cool cars is from 2002, it was a Lincoln Austin Martin powered Continental Concept sedan.
Yeah. Yes.
What? Which has an Austin Martin V12 under the hood.
Ooh.
And it has a full set of custom luggage. I mean, it almost looks like something that, I can't think of his name. The TV show. There was Batman, and then there was the other one, the guy that drove
the Green Hornet.
The Green Hornet.
Yeah.
It looks like something the Green Hornet would have driven.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a... incredible looking vehicle.
Tom, do we know how Larry accrued all of this? Obviously, he had to have some bucks.
Just over time. And I think that this wasn't meant to be a museum. This is just where he kept his cars. But probably ultimately, for tax purposes, it made sense to make it a business. So he did that.
Yeah.
I'm looking at these pictures. There's a Tucker.
No. Wait.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I want the 1955 Ford Beatnik bubble top. It is in the most beautiful metallic purpley blue, born the same year I was. Steve, auction time, Saturday, September 20. That's an amazing looking vehicle. It looks like a lowrider. It's so low to the ground.
It's also an interesting website, thedrive.com. And you click on one of their stories. Look for the headline is huge auto museum shutting down and selling off 295 pristine collector cars at thedrive.com, and you will see some wonderful pictures.
And Tom, what was the Tucker story? Because I don't see that on the.
Oh, just that there is a Tucker. Yeah. There's only, 48 of those? I forget. But
yeah,
a Tucker of any kind is just super rare. He's got one, and I don't always see them in this kind of light blue, which is nice.
He's got one of the Batmobiles. It got two Batmobiles.
Yeah, and this wasn't intended to be a museum like the Volo Auto Museum. This was just this guy's man cave, which is just crazy. And Steve, all I can say is thank goodness the Studebaker Champion is in lime green, because we ain't getting a lime green car. Simple as that.
But it's a Studebaker. This one is
not for you. A listener from a 616 area code said, my dad was an executive at Studebaker. My family had four of them. Sorry, Steve. When my sister and I got the last one for our use, my sister and her friend totaled it on a college Greek weekend. She ended up with a Ford Torino.
Okay.
Serves her right.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Should we go to, again, you can find that information on this Claremont collection. We even have a link on our Facebook page. But if you're looking for it, it's Claremont with a K. And the Mecum Auto Auction, we should get the guys on from Mecum again.
Yeah, it's been too long since we talked with them.
And this would be a great hook to have them talk about this collection and...
But also, speaking of websites, the blatant plug light just started flashing. You should go to consumerguide.com. And what are some of the things that you will find when you go to consumerguide.com, Tom?
Oh, all sorts of good stuff. Got that Navigator review we just talked about. That's up there now. I did a piece over the week about the Ford Model T moment that we just discussed. Mm-hmm. I also did a piece about LED headlights. I just called it What Are LED Headlights? But we're at that point again in the wonderful evolution of automotive lighting technology where we're driving around and being blinded again.
Yep.
So,
well,
this is why. And
I have to say, this is something we are really, really sensitive to right now. Johnny had cataract surgery on one eye. She's having the other eye done this coming Monday. Because of that, oh boy, as we're driving in at night, tonight with the rain and the headlights, we were both having a horrible time.
You said, could you drive? And I said, no, I couldn't. It was just until I get another good eye, because they're just big fireballs coming at you. So thank you for doing that article. I would also mention there's a fun piece that you did on doctors in cars, advertisements with physicians in cars, which is very funny.
Yeah, I like to do that. I don't do enough of that lately, but I love old ads, and I love to group them together around a theme. And a couple of these are interesting ads, too, because they take place during World War II. So you don't see the car so much as you see how glad manufacturers are that their cars last.
Yeah.
It's because you couldn't buy new ones for a while.
Interesting you should mention liking old car ads. For some reason, a ton of old car ads have been showing up on Facebook over about the past 3 weeks, and I've been downloading some of the better ones. It's just some of it is Art Deco stuff, and sometimes it's just a really cool car that it's nice to see.
Tom knows that because you send that to him and me, right, Tom? And in the middle of the night, I go, "Why is my that's Steve sending me another car ad?"
Well, just trying to share the wealth.
Yes, yes.
There are some beautiful sort of end of Deco era Ford ads. Stunning. Just the art is so good, and those are worth seeing. But yeah, when the ads included drawings of cars and not photographs, everything was special.
What are the drawings that we have? In fact, it's an Avanti. We have the big...
Oh, yeah. We got that, and I'm trying to think, who did we get that from? It may have been one of a couple things that we got from Nate Altman, who took over the Avante dealership when Studebaker went out of business.
Oh.
In fact, we have a rare book that he sent me a copy of years ago. Sadly, Nate passed away. But we got the book. But then I believe, you were able to somehow find this picture of the Avante on eBay. And it's a beauty. It's framed in our basement right now. We got to get to some recalls, too.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about Ford earlier. We talked about the F-150. We were talking about Lincolns. And Ford and Lincoln in the news for recalls, right, Tom?
Again, they're getting really close to 10 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting crazy. But we talked about the Aviator recall. That's 2025 Lincoln Aviators, all of them, it seems, being recalled for what you noted, Johnny, and that's that the rear windows aren't responding correctly to obstacles in their path.
Hmm.
And it looks like letters for that will be going out on September 15th.
And so Ford is recalling over 103,000 F-150 pickup trucks due to damaged axle bolts. That sounds kind of serious.
Super serious, yeah. That means that technically a wheel could fall off. So
yeah. Wow.
That's not good. Or if the wheel doesn't fall off, it will separate from the axle and not be controlled and result in a loss of control. So, yeah, it's just bad news. Mm. It's 103,000 of those. Word goes out August 8 on those. So, should have gone out.
Steve, were you actually, are you the guy that I live with that was mm-hmm. in his car and saw a wheel rolling down the road? And
this was back when I was I would have been in my teenage years. Driving one of my dad's cars, I had taken it to a Southside gas station. They had worked on one of the wheels, and everything was supposedly okay. I'm driving away from the gas station, driving home, and all of a sudden I see a wheel going by me, and a minute later, the back of the car goes down, and I had to, fortunately, I was able to stop. Got to a phone booth and called up the garage and had them. They hadn't put all the lug nuts on tight enough.
Oh, dear.
And the wheel just literally rolled off. And this was down South Chicago Avenue about 83rd and South Chicago Avenue.
Busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had to go get your wheel, obviously, that was rolling down. So it didn't even take a minute, but you just imagine that. Gee, look, there's a wheel, kabunk. The car goes down.
Exactly.
Wow. And then you and I had just picked up your Buick, your Regal, and we were at a bus. We were stopped at a bus stop, and a guy waiting on a bus tapped on the window, and he goes, "Your wheel is wobbling."
And we realized what had happened was this was in winter,
mm-hmm.
and there had been an icy day, and I remember. We were coming down, I think it was it Bryn Mawr?
Mm-hmm.
And come up to a stop sign, not driving fast, but hit a patch of ice, literally did a U-turn in the intersection. Fortunately, nobody was around, and car slammed up against the curb.
And that's all it took.
Realized that, and we were able to drive away, didn't know anything was wrong. But then a few blocks later, a guy says, your wheel's about to come off. Fortunately, we weren't too far from a gas station, pulled in, and they solved that problem.
You never want to hear that.
You ever had that happen, Tom?
I have not. No, I did have my tie rod end break. I was driving my 1977 CJ7. Luckily, I was driving at low speed in a neighborhood, maybe 25 miles an hour. But the tie rod broke, and then the wheels just splayed out in different directions, and I came to a very sudden stop because the car couldn't move forward, and I wasn't belted because I was an idiot, and this was the 80s,
mm-hmm.
so I slammed into the steering wheel. Had I been going faster, that would have ended much worse.
And what kind of car was it? A CJ?
My 1977 Jeep CJ7.
A Jeep.
Yeah, it was totally trashed and one of the greatest vehicles I ever owned.
So tell me about this this Volkswagen. It's a new version of the Volkswagen Buzz.
Buzz.
The Volkswagen ID Buzz.
Yeah, and it took forever to come to America. People have probably seen a couple on the roads now because they're for sale. It's called the ID Buzz, and it's a version of the old microbus, which we used to call the Volkswagen Type 2. And they meant to capture the color and the charm, and they kind of did that, but it's electric. And it's much roomier and bigger and more powerful than the original microbus, which is good because the original microbus was cool to look at and no fun at all to drive. Mm-hmm. It was terribly slow and lousy handling and very, very loud. Americans only get the long wheelbase version of this vehicle. So we're getting one that's fully minivan size, and it does have sliding side doors. So the good news is great retro styling, beautiful interior, relatively fun to drive, firm, sporty handling. But super expensive for a minivan. They start at 60. They get over 80 in a hurry, and the range isn't good. I think peak range is about 220 miles, which American consumers really want more than that.
Can't you also get a different transmission? I mean, there. I thought I heard that you...
Yeah, we were watching...
it was John Davis.
Yeah, Motor Week.
Motor Week,
they
yeah.
did a test of it, and I thought there was some option you had for, was it a different transmission or a different engine upgrade or something like that? But I think they said that it would... That would even deplete the mileage even more.
Oh, good. Oh,
yeah, if you go generally with electric vehicles, more power comes from going to all-wheel drive.
And that's what because, it was.
Yeah, the battery's in the middle, so there's no drive shaft. There's no way to get power from one motor to the other. So all-wheel drive is accomplished with a second axle with a motor on it.
Yeah.
So you add a second motor, you get more power, and that's great. But it does add weight, and if you have two motors, you're using the battery at a quicker rate. So more power, less range, but yeah, and more price. Four-wheel drive electric vehicles do cost considerably more than front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive versions.
So you're going to be able to get in that buzz and buzz around town. I'm going to bet that you're going to get a lot of horn beeping, thumbs up, or what?
Because just from the pictures we've seen, the styling looks terrific.
It's adorable.
Yeah, and they've got that great light blue and white or orange and white color scheme.
Oh,
there's a yellow and white, too. Well, these are quite a classic old school Volkswagen color, so it really works.
So when you're driving, I can't wait to find out if it's got like that school bus steering wheel. Like that, you know, where it's kind of flat at your belly, you know, and you're looking over the steering wheel and over the dash. And
it's a real wide steering wheel.
Oh, sadly, it doesn't. The interior is it's very contemporary. It's a very nice, modern-looking interior. But it's not retro inside in any way, unfortunately.
What?
I'm just, let me quickly mention, a listener said, you didn't mention the Ford recall of parking lights on the F-150 pickup truck. So I just looked it up. Sure enough, the other day, apparently one of our listeners is concerned about this. Indeed, there was a recall on the incorrectly repaired F-150 pickup trucks because of their flickering parking lights. So if you haven't received your letter, you probably will. And Ford, they just keep heaping on them, right, Tom?
Oh, my gosh. Next time we visit, we can just make a short list of the cars that aren't being recalled.
there we go.
Ouch.
Well, on that note, if people want to follow you, where should they go? What should they do?
You know, I would love it if people would follow our the Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast Facebook page. Just check that out, and we keep people up to date on what's going to happen on the show and what just happened on the show. So that's handy. And, of course, just check us out at consumerguide.com.
And also follow you on Blue Sky as Car Guy Tom.
That's me.
Mm-hmm. And listen to the show live on Mondays, right, Tom?
Mondays at 3 p.m. on TalkZone, TalkZone.com. Yeah, you can listen to the podcast live.
And Tom will be back with us in a couple of weeks. And as always, thank you for your time, Tom. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Keep dry.
Thanks.
We'll try our best.
Keep your power. That's what you need.
We got a bunch coming up. Sports between the sheets. Gabe, should we start with what I think everybody is anticipating? Sunday night, we get to see the front line of the Bears in action and sort of evaluate what the season might hold.
Certainly what we've been waiting for all summer. Obviously, there was a little disappointment that most of the starters did not play. I think there was only a handful, mostly on offensive and defensive line, that suited up last week. So it'll be nice to see Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze and those guys get out there and get some reps. Now, how long they play is unknown. I imagine no more than the first half. Probably I'd be surprised if they played beyond the first quarter. But again, you know, preseason is a fickle thing sometimes.
Yeah,
but it is our first chance to get an idea of what they might be doing.
Right, and you want to get them as many reps as possible. Obviously, it helps that they had the joint practices with Buffalo on Friday and the Dolphins last week, and the starters got a lot of reps in those practices, but. You know, in those joint practices, you're not hitting as hard as you would in a game. So I think, you know, that a lot of people don't understand how much of a difference that actually makes. So it'll be nice to see the starters get out there and mix it up in actual game conditions.
Yeah.
I must say, there although I'm glad that the Bears didn't lose last week, it was still kind of disappointing because they had opportunities to win the game. I know it's only preseason, but I just got annoyed with seeing them go for fourth down as many times as they did.
Yep.
Like they were playing NFL Blitz on Nintendo 64. That's what I thought of every time they did that.
Well, Gabe is going to be a happy guy because working the schedule, I know you're thrilled that the game is 7 o'clock on Sunday night, right?
Yeah, so I'll be able to sleep and actually watch the whole game more often than not. Like, I usually miss the first quarter, sometimes the first half because I'm still sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll definitely be nice. I could watch the game during dinner probably.
And they're playing here at Soldier Field, so the Buffalo Bills and the Bears. And then their next game is a Friday night game, right?
I have to double check the schedule, but I do believe in that. I do believe that's the case, and that is their only road game of this preseason. But I will say this, for those going to the game tonight, just know that we could get some more rain. We've been talking about rain all night.
Yeah.
So just be prepared for the elements. It'll be nice to see the Bears starters fully take the field, and we'll get to see a preview of what could be in store for this season. And, you know, Buffalo lost their preseason game last week, too. Again, I know it's only preseason, but it kind of gives both teams a little extra motivation to go out there and, you know, do something. I will say this, you know, what we're looking for in this game, you know, we're going to see, you know, how this offense is putting it all together. We're going to see what this defense looks like with, you know, the actual 11 starters. You know, last week, you know, it was just all about getting guys reps, seeing what you have on the bench, seeing what you have on the depth chart. Now we're finally going to see, you know, the starters, the guys who actually will take the field come kickoff next month.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll see what they're made of. We'll see, you know, how they've improved from last season. So there are things to look for. Although it's always nice when the scoreboard is in favor of the Bears, though.
Right, yeah. Right.
Now, I will segue, because the Bears are going to be on this evening, and that would be a conflict with the White Sox on ESPN 1000. The White Sox will be heard right here on this very radio station with Len Casper and Darren Jackson. I love listening to Len and Darren. Even if it's a bad game, they do a great show. It's like you're eavesdropping on two friends sitting in the stands watching
a
baseball
game.
It's great coverage.
I've always been a fan of Darren Jackson. He's just so laid back, even during the worst of times.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Len Casper's a consummate professional as far as, you know, play-by-play goes.
Sure.
So, it's always a joy to listen to those guys, good or bad.
They have a great chemistry together. And Darren has a wonderfully snarky sense of humor.
Yes.
That's what makes him so great, though.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And speaking of baseball, how about Clarendon Hills?
You know, it's good to see, you know, some local kids get some national TV exposure. I haven't watched the Little League World Series as much as I did when I was younger, but, you know, I don't remember, you know, a lot of Chicago area teams playing in that in the past.
So
it's good to see some local kids get a chance, you know, to showcase, you know, what they can do on national TV. You know, obviously growing up, I was like, oh, I want to play in the Little League World Series. I never did, but, you know, I don't even know how that works exactly, how they choose the teams and, you know, so forth. I think I want to say it's about maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little longer, there was the Jackie Robinson West team that was in it.
Right.
But beyond that, I don't remember any other Chicago area teams that I can remember off the top of my head that participated. So it's good to see it. Although the Jackie Robinson West team was fun to watch too. They were a great team. And now we have another local team that's out there just trying to, you know, put Chicagoland on the map. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of tough competition, obviously, as we've seen. They've had to play some grinders for games, but, you know, that's just the nature of the beast when it comes to the Little League World Series. You're literally getting, like, the best teams in the world, essentially.
And they play six innings, and Clarendon Hills will be playing at noon on Sunday.
And I love the spirit in Little League baseball. I mean, that's the what was the team we were watching?
New Orleans.
Was it New Orleans?
Yeah.
when the pitcher hit a batter, and as the batter was running to first base, the pitcher kind of ran over and said, "Hey, I'm sorry I did that."
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Just their attitude, that's the way it should be in the majors.
I watched interviews with a couple of pitchers from winning games this past week, and I'm in awe of them. They could teach some of the adults in the stands a thing or two, because these boys were just, they were delightful. They were polite and complimentary to the team that they had just beat, which is huge. And I thought, yeah, that's the way you raise them up, you know? So,
and speaking of baseball, we got to talk about the Cubs for a second. And I've been surprised at the number of posts I've seen on various social media platforms with Cubs, lifetime Cubs fans saying, basically, I didn't expect them to fold this early.
Yeah.
You know, let's not hit the panic button. I know. I mean, look, let's also be real.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I don't see them winning the division. I know they have that big 5-game series with the Brewers coming up at Wrigley. That's going to definitely, go a long way in deciding for sure if the Cubs can still contend for the division. But I'm saying I don't think it's going to happen at this point. The Brewers have won 14 straight. I don't see anybody stopping them. So the Cubs just need to rack up as many wins as they can and, just get in the playoffs period at this point.
Well, the game that they won on Saturday, they came from behind, and I guess that was the first time they did that since early July, where they were able to flip it and come from behind to win a game.
They've obviously, they've had their struggles. There's the days where the offense goes cold, and there's the days where the pitching just doesn't hold up. Although we've talked about this, throughout the year, that their pitching hasn't been the greatest, during the course of the season. They've had their moments. Like, for example, the eighth and ninth innings, bullpen pitched two scoreless innings to win the game on Saturday, essentially. But Friday, they also gave up what amounted to be the game-winning run. So the bullpen's more of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type thing as far as the Cubs go. But, at this point, obviously, trade deadline's come and gone. The only way you're going to add people is either free agency or if you bring up minor leaguers. I don't see that happening this late in the season. So the best bet is just to, work with what you have and just rack up as many wins as you can and try to get a playoff spot. Because, like I said, I don't see them catching Milwaukee at this point.
Then call the boys in Clarendon Hills and see what they can tell you. Right?
And speaking of Milwaukee, one of the freaky things to me was about a week ago with the horrible storms through Wisconsin and seeing the Brewers stadium, the domed stadium,
leaking.
The roof leaked during that storm. It was crazy.
Not just drips either. It was a big deal.
I want to say that's when the city got flooded, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
Yes, last Saturday night. Yeah.
I saw some video of that, and it was just unreal. Because so I've been to Milwaukee many times. I worked there for a time. And I actually, back in 2005, I was there when severe weather hit, and nothing like I saw in those videos.
No.
I don't know how frequently that happens in Milwaukee, but definitely was something, because I've seen, that looked worse than some of the floods that I've seen, here in Chicago, for sure.
Yeah.
I imagine that there was... certainly a lot that went wrong that night. Hopefully everybody up there is okay.
Well, I mentioned earlier that the casino was so flooded that people were not able to retrieve their cars until Friday, this past Friday. So for a week, their car sat there while the water was going down. And the drone video that I saw, the cars were in lousy shape.
Lot of those cars are going to be wind up being totaled.
Yeah. Oh, you have to believe that, sure.
And imagine, dealing with the insurance companies about that too. Yes. It's going to be a pain to deal with. So, hopefully everybody up there is okay. And, we wish them all the best. But, yeah, certainly, that video was unreal. But I was not aware about what happened at the stadium up there. That sounds pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, look at it. You'll find some of the videos on YouTube and I think on some Facebook. But it's just crazy to see the dome stadium roof closed and seriously leaking during that storm.
And Milwaukee, I'm hoping and praying that you're not getting anything tonight as we're all talking about rain here in the Chicago area. And we still have people that are checking in, Gabe, from Streamwood and parts of Palatine, that they're still without power. So ComEd is out there trying to put the pieces back together again, but this has been a really, really crazy Saturday.
Yeah, I have not seen any official numbers from ComEd yet, but I'm gonna see if I can find some because, yeah, that's, you know, I was hearing about that too, that there's some power outages. And obviously, there was what happened in Mount Prospect with the roof getting ripped off of that apartment building, and you know, so the residents there are displaced, and so now they're trying to determine if the building's even safe to try to repair and go back to.
Now, that was a microburst, right?
That's what the deputy fire chief of Mount Prospect said. So, I mean, obviously, you know, that would be up to the weather service to confirm that. But definitely something was strong enough to tear the roof off of an entire building.
Yeah, because we've had some listeners check in and saying, we had a tornado. Yeah. And I said, well, there's a difference. I mean, it's still horrible. Right? Yeah. But a microburst, I think you don't get a warning that you're under a microburst warning. It's there. Yeah. All right, Gabe, put back on your news hat. A couple of things coming up in this last stretch of the show.
Carl Giamorisi, one of the founding members of the Buckinghams, and Carl is going to be in the studio with us next week. We got a full show next week starting at 9 o'clock. Carl is going to bring his guitar and share some songs from his brand new album.
It's his solo album.
Album is called Let the Music Play. And it's been a while. We haven't seen Carl for
years.
Have we seen him since we've been in this studio?
I don't think so. No. He's been a very, very busy guy.
Yeah.
We're lucky that we were able to pin him down. The CD's coming out right around the day that he's in studio with us. Yeah. But he's been traveling and performing with the Buckinghams literally all
very
year.
Very active. Yeah. They've been doing some of the Happy Together tours and a lot of solo performances and some of the Cornerstones of Rock shows and
just Happy Together tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's next Saturday night. And then the following Saturday, which would be, believe it or not, the end of August, John Barry is going to join us.
Yeah.
John Barry, a country performer who's kind of reflecting back on 25 years ago when he had a number one hit, his first number one hit in country music. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be at Hey Nani's in September. So he's going to stop by and chat with us and get caught up. And actually, I think it was 30 years ago that his first
I think you're right.
Number one country tune hit the charts. And I loved him then, and I was frankly a little surprised that he was back on the circuit. And Hey Nani's, God bless them. They are doing some great booking.
Speaking of music, how about Taylor Swift? out of the blue, she does a podcast. And
with the Kelce Boys,
and it breaks, I think, every record for any podcast ever in the history of podcasts.
Yeah,
and she announces this this new album that she has coming out, "The Life of a Showgirl," and the pictures from the album.
Wow.
Hello,
gee, she's a girl, all right.
Julian, have you seen some of the pictures from the Taylor Swift?
He's not crazy about Taylor.
"The Life of a Showgirl" album.
I'm not crazy about Taylor. I'm just not.
I thought I heard that somewhere.
Take a look at the pictures, Julian. She's a girl.
I was reading a couple of threads on Facebook, and the behavior of Travis Kelce sitting next to her has been analyzed to death. And I followed this one thread where people were saying, if you have a son, you should make him watch this. This is how women should be treated. Look how he's holding her hand, and the body language says, I care about you. You're number. I couldn't believe the analysis of their behavior.
So much analysis.
But it was sweet. It was really cute, too.
I just think it's enjoyable to see them together. They're having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Julian is looking at the album pictures. Is that what you're looking at, Julian?
No, I'm working. And to be clear, I'm not a fan. It's just I think she's overhyped.
And can she help that?
She works very hard.
Yeah, She is an incredibly hardworking person. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I said to Steve, you wonder what she's up to? Because the woman doesn't just take time off. And boom, she announced she had a brand new album out.
At some point, she doesn't need to do anything she doesn't want to do. It would be interesting if she wrote a book on using the internet.
Yes.
She was one of the first to understand the potential power of social media, and she really built her fan base through social media.
Yeah, one-on-one.
Boy, does she know how to maximize that.
That's true.
And boy, does she know how to wear those outfits in those photos.
Yeah.
Julian discovered that through hard work and research. Aaron Water Show weekend. Yep. And
now, Mike Jensen said it looks like the weather's going to hold off so they can get in that 10:30 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, day two of the Aaron Water Show.
And hopefully not break any more windows.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
We have a special connection. Those of you who have listened for a long time know that Johnny and I have a very special connection. I hope that yawn feels as good as it looks, Julian.
You have no idea.
Oxygen to the brain helps.
Yeah,
it really
does. And,
and you know, it's not a reflection on us. And
no, of course not, Julian.
I'm working very diligently.
Yes. Aaron Water Show has a special place in our hearts. That's when we first started realizing that us was going to be an us.
43 years ago?
Yeah.
Holy smokes. I always say it's the white short shorts that did it. It didn't hurt.
Yeah, we were broadcasting. In fact, have you put that up yet?
I'm going to.
It was many, many years ago, and Johnny and I were broadcasting from the Aaron Water Show, working for another radio station, WIND. Broadcasting from Oak Street Beach, and we've told the story. But
that was back where there was also a water show, where there were boats, and they were doing things out in the water.
Right. And we've told the story before, but we're going to put up a link to a blog post we did on this when we were broadcasting from the Air and Water Show, and that was the time when Johnny suddenly stopped talking and ran into the trailer, and I turned around to talk to somebody who was standing right next to me with a boa constrictor around his shoulder.
A ginormous snake. So the picture you will see will be Steve turning and looking right at the snake that the guy was holding by its head, right at him. I, of course, am in the trailer peering out the window, knocking, trying to get him to realize that there's somebody standing behind him with a snake. But there's no way for you to mime that. It just doesn't work. So you turned around and, there he was. As a result of that, we talked about it live on the radio, and the city of Chicago got wind of it and passed a regulation that said, you cannot walk the beachfront with your snake. Leave your snake at home if you're going to be walking.
And that's not code.
No.
That's you can't walk the beachfront
with your snake. If you're packing a snake, don't go to the beach.
Everything I want to say.
Why am I thinking of Speedos?
Yeah, right.
Never mind.
And you will also see a picture on this blog. Johnny and I, after the show was over, we walked on Michigan Avenue. We wound up in the John Hancock Center. We took a picture, and it was kind of when we really realized, see, it's the last few minutes I'm running out of the good words.
No.
We realized that
it's our wonderful history.
We're about to become a him and her.
I'm not so sure about that, because I was really ready to give you up to the snake.
Yeah, you were. Come to think of it.
So I really hadn't come around yet. But that's also the night, because we started out at about 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was hot. And we broadcast for hours, like 6 hours mm-hmm. out there. And then, instead of getting a nap, we walked Michigan Avenue, and we stopped, and we had ice cream. And then I did a midnight show until 7 o'clock on Sunday morning. And as I'm driving home, that's when I fell asleep on the East-West Tollway. Mm-hmm. And if it hadn't been for that metal post with a reflector on the top of it along the side of the road, I'd probably be pretty dead right now, because when I smacked mm-hmm. that and it curled under my car and punctured my gas tank, that woke me up. It's funny how that happens.
Yeah.
It woke me up, and I dragged myself back out on the tollway. And as I'm driving along, a trucker is blowing his horn. I pulled over, and he said, "Hey, you are sparking, and gas is pouring out of the back of your car." And so I had to get a tow truck, and they actually pulled that reflector post out from under my car and gave it to me. But then I had to get rid of it, because I didn't want my folks to see it and know that I'd fallen asleep. But I was exhausted. So you wore me down. Then I said, "Okay, I'll go out on another date with you." I almost died.
Yeah. Oops.
Oh.
Blue lights are flashing. Zamboni is being heard. Big plug. Bob is riding a Zamboni to clean up the studio, and that means it's time for our last call.
Yes.
And if you would like to be our last caller, get your dial and finger ready, 312-981-7200. That number again is 312-981-7200.
And if you haven't won anything in the last 2 months or 60 days, we got some nifty prizes that we can give to you if you are a last caller. And you don't have to have anything profound to say. You can just hang with us for a few minutes. Yeah. Be the cherry on top of our five-hour show.
And if you want to know, let us know what the weather has been like in your neck of the woods. And hopefully you have power, because it's been one of those nights when all over the place, it has been not fun for a whole lot of people. So whatever mm-hmm. you're doing, stay safe.
Absolutely. And by the way, a couple of people said, "Did I miss the shout outs?" No, you did not miss them. We hit the ground running, and we were really focusing.
This is the first night we didn't do shout outs. Good grief.
We're focusing on weather in that first segment of the show, and have Mike Jensen on, and we're taking text about the weather, and it was still really, really iffy. And frankly, it's still a challenge for me to read with one good eye and one bad eye.
And Johnny is having her second eye done. The cataract surgery is going to be done Monday.
Yes. I'm so happy. This time last week, or 2 weeks ago, I was apprehensive because I thought, well, I don't know if this is the right thing to do. I'm scared to death. And it was so easy. Oh, my gosh. And I'm just so tickled that I can see Steve's color is healthy, and the lights on our year-round guitar Christmas tree are way too bright. Just, I said to you last night,
I said, this is the first time you realized there were white lights.
They're white. I thought they were soft yellow lights. Literally, I was standing there, and I put my hand over my left eye, and I was like, whoa, that's really garish. Mm-hmm. What are we doing? No.
Yes. Well, that's why we can flick it to the colored lights, too.
I know. So. But all this time, I thought they were nice, warm yellow lights. So that's what cataracts will do for you, or to you.
Lines are jamming up very quickly. Go to our blog, and we would love it if you would subscribe to our blog. It's no cost. We don't spam you. And it is steveandjohnny.wordpress.com, steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. And one of our most recent posts is a post about why on our podcast you don't hear music. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with the different platforms that podcasts are on and their music licenses, and that's why you won't hear it. And
so take that, performers, where your music doesn't get to be played.
But as we mentioned on the blog, if we have a performer in studio, which we will next week with Carl Giamorisi, mm-hmm. And videos of that performance will be on our blog and on our YouTube page. We explain it all for you, Lucy.
That's right.
So go to stephenjohnny.wordpress.com.
By the way, a listener texted in from 773, thanks for playing the Paper Lace song. Awesome. That's a great Chicago song. I'm waiting for the flip side. Egads, how could you play that piece of dreck from 51 years ago? I'm just still, 51 years, how can that be?
That's crazy.
Yes.
That's wrong.
It is.
I picked last week. You picked this week.
I'm going to let Julian pick. I'm passing the buck because I'm not seeing well. And you know what happens when I'm not seeing well. I can't hear well. I speak poorly.
What'd you say?
So, Julian, it's your turn.
All right. What did she say?
Stop it. Right. You made me feel better, though, because you said that your dad does the same thing. He says, what'd you say? I don't have my glasses on.
Oh, yeah. He's as blind as a bat. Me, too. I'm very blind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as Bob said, I needed a dog before this.
Well, it's hard to talk when you can't see what you're saying.
I know.
Exactly. Can't read lips.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since we have two eyes, I'm going to go with caller number two, and that is John in Cortland, Illinois.
Oh.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
Hey, guys. How are you? It's John from Brass from the Past. I've been texting with you guys all night.
Oh.
Yeah, we read your text earlier tonight.
Yes. Oh, how fun.
Yeah.
Is that kind of freaky, though, when you're listening to the radio and you text and you get a response back? Is that kind of weird?
You know, it's pretty normal these days for me. So, I love that you guys are responsive. So, yeah, but it's been a crazy night.
Yes.
But how scary was it? Because for people who weren't listening, John was with the group. They were getting ready to perform, and then the storm hit, and they had to cancel the performance, right?
Yeah, well, I live out near DeKalb, so I left at 3 o'clock. We had a 4:30 call time. I have about an hour drive from DeKalb area. Cortland is 4 miles east from DeKalb.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on my way out there, and the storm hit me on 47 out before I got on 90. And so I kind of parked at a gas station and was going to wait it out, was trying to hear from anybody if it's canceled or what.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't hear from anybody, so I thought, if I don't get going, I'm going to be late if it blows over. You never know.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So I got a 90. I'm driving in, it's clear in the windshield, and it's black as heck in the rearview mirror with the storm behind me that already hit me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Got out there, within 15 minutes of parking across from the grounds, it hit like crazy. I mean, our cars were shaking, and our poor sound guy was already set up for us.
Oh,
and, you know, the tent got blown in, and he had some equipment that's probably damaged. Wonderful guy, and felt bad for him, and... But we made the best out of it. We, they canceled, unfortunately, and that was sad. But everybody got evacuated. Everybody's safe.
John, that was in Niles, wasn't it?
Niles, right.
Yeah.
It was Niles Founders Day Fest.
Right.
Yeah. We were all excited to play. So, you know, you have all that adrenaline ready to play for a two-hour show, and we're a high-energy band with six horns and 14 pieces.
Mm.
And, so I went out with our wonderful vocalist for dinner at Moretti's, had a wonderful dinner. Her niece was in town from West Virginia. I drove her home to Bronzeville because her husband, who's a gigging sax player, had to drop her off. They only have one car. So I drove her home, dropped her off at Bronzeville, and drove all the way back to DeKalb.
Wow.
I've been on an adrenaline high ever since because we never played. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to my two favorite radio people that I've listened to for years.
Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you so much. And you texted to say you got a gig coming up in Evanston on my birthday, September 5th, right?
Okay. I didn't know who I was talking to, but I figured it might be your birthday. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'd love to see you.
So
really we're fun band.
Where are you going to be in Evanston on September 5th?
The Levi Senior Center, and believe me, don't let Senior Center fool you. We played out there earlier inside, and it was one of the most energetic crowds we've had. People come out from the whole community, and I think it's a free concert. This time it's outside in September.
Oh, good.
And they begged us to come back, so yep.
Awesome.
But, you would love the band.
Do you guys have any videos up on YouTube?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just look up Brass from the Past on YouTube. Our website is kind of out of date. I've been bugging our leader about it because it doesn't reflect the current band, and he's been working on it. But, you know, the band's been around 16 years and has a great following, and we play all the soul, R&B, rock, you name it, Edgar Winter, you know, everybody. We play six-piece horns, horns playing everything, great musicians, great community. It's a really cohesive band, and, yeah, it's been really fun. I'm widowed now, and I used to play wedding bands all over, and I'm playing this band now, and I'm just loving it. It's
good.
It's a wonderful gig. Yeah.
I hear your voice.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I'm almost positive that I stumbled across some videos of your band and liked them, and showed Johnny a couple of videos a couple months ago. You guys are good.
I sent you guys an email, and because we were playing at Virginia.
And you did the Botanic Gardens.
Yep, we had 2,000 people at Botanic Gardens last
Wednesday.
Yep,
that's
in the 90-degree heat. This is the best band that not enough people know about. To be real honest with you, it's a real special thing.
Brass from the Past.
Yep.
And it's a horn band.
On Facebook.
Yeah.
Yep, we're on Facebook. We're on brassfromthepast.com. Although, again, our website looks like it's some other band. It's like 5 years, 6 years old. It looks like a stodgy wedding band when they were doing a lot of weddings. So, I'm bugging our leader about it, but,
Well, now that we've shamed him on the air, he has to change it. So, well, thanks a lot, John, for communicating with us early on about the weather. And we do appreciate that, too.
Hold on for a couple seconds, and Julian will get all of your personal information.
We'll send you out an official WGN Radio T-shirt. And because he is a musician, I think we will also kick in one of our 25th anniversary Steve and Johnny Life After Dark CDs.
Yeah. Boy, this has been a serious fast 5 hours. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Thanks to everybody who was nice enough to make this show as much fun as it was. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Bob and to Ron and to Gabe and to Julian. And you still looking at that picture, Julian?
it's for me to know and you to find out. Never.
Okay, fine.
See you all next week on the radio.
And stay safe.